Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Jane, only know that I'm not free nights when I am sane. And now let's have a party, pour my body full of wine. Stand me in a corner, let me crawl to my mind. I found the only lady I will need when I wake. She has a heart of crystal, clearly one I will not break. Don't be concerned, my love, when you see me cry. Laughter does not choose to free the happiness inside. Just as there may seem to be a smile that's out of place, it only means there is a pain that hurts too much to face. Right now, let's have a party. My body full of wine. Stand me in a corner, let me crawl to my mind. I found the only lady I will need when I'm away. She has a heart of crystal, clearly one I would not break.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 55. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Dave. How have you been going this week? You feeling any better? Yeah.
Well, no, this week has been an exceptionally emotional week for me.
Oh, no.
And I haven't been happy at all, actually.
I mean, this is good news because it proves that you have emotion. That's,
I know. Well, we all know that I love the Australian cricket team. We all know that. And it's been a tough week. You know, US listeners will probably not know about this. Anyone in Australia would know about this. Like, my beloved Smithy was caught out in a ball tampering scandal, which has been ridiculously overplayed in the public and fanned by hysterical media, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I'm so sick of the media. Like, yes, they made a mistake. But then the way they lead the witch hunt, get people all riled up, people who don't support our team, who weren't happy when we won 4-0, and then these people are calling for repercussions. Like, I heard people talking about life bans, Stu. Like, it's like, break it down for a sec. They got caught on something which the punishment for it is at most, a match's suspension. That's the ICC's ruling, which they gave, and that's the most they can give. And when the captain of the opposition team has been caught ball tampering twice, It's been a very emotional week for me. Now, Smithy had to kind of fall on his sword. Warner and him have been banned for a year, can't even play domestic cricket. It's just been a terrible, terrible, terrible week. And I was watching Smithy at the press conference last night. I was extremely emotional. And I just want to say, Stu, for Man Single of Doom, my total support for the cricket team and for Smithy. That's it, 100%.
See, I'm in the opposite camp.
What are you doing over there?
Fuck him. You're dumb enough to do something like that's not an accidental thing.
They were caught.
But
you know Warner Driver as well. Have you fully investigated? Like,
I mean, the three players that have been banned, Bancroft, Warner and Smith, I mean, obviously Bancroft was the only player that was actually doing it on the day. But the other two were aware of it, they were condoning it, and they're the captains.
Well, Warner was the one who came up with it. And Smith didn't even know about it until it was literally happening.
Well,
that's the story.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, we don't know, but I don't know. So they've got.
But look,
months.
I mean, for US listeners, just to break this down somewhat, Steve Smith has been rated one of, if not the best batsman in the world
since like the all-time best, Bradman.
Yeah, but
He's as good as say Ponting, who is our other best player. You know,
Like statistically, he's first in the world right now. He is the best in the world at that sport.
Exactly.
And he gets caught up in ball tampering. And it's not something you can accidentally do. Like, I understand if players take cold and flu meds and they...
Oh, no, it's a conscious...
And they run up a positive test or something accidentally.
Yeah.
But this is a conscious, we are going to cheat to win.
They were guilty. There's no one disputing that. They were being found guilty. And I think what has happened, Stu, is it comes down to personalities. Like, Smithy, if you've ever watched him, he hasn't had that much of a leash on David Warner, who's the vice-captain. Who's a lot more aggressive, a lot more...
But, I mean, he's in a hard situation because David's the more experienced player.
Yeah,
He's been on that team for longer, and he was captain for a little while. He's been vice-captain.
He's been vice-captain for a long time, and he's just more... Like, personality-wise, I was watching recently when Warner was blowing up in a stand. Like, this whole tour against South Africa has been...
It's been a heated tour.
A very bitterly heated...
There's been
We've been overreacting ourselves. Like,
There's been a lot of sledging. There's been a lot of... behaviour that's probably not acceptable.
Well, like, Warner will try to go after the guy in the stairwell. Like, to me, that's not on. And then if you watch the footage, you saw, like I think it was Khawaja, one of his opening partners, was kind of holding him back. And Smithy kind of came and held him, Stu, but it was like... It wasn't like an AB.
Yeah, it was like, I have to be seen to...
It was kind of like a little arm over him and a whisper in his ear. It was like a toothless tiger, as Hammershell described it. And I had disquiet... Then, watching that. This is before the ball tampering incident came out. I said to Michelle, I am worried about this team because Smithy just doesn't have control of him at all.
No, they were too emotionally invested in this win.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, look, 12 months is 12 months. Smithy is good enough to come back from it, and I'm sure he will.
They can still play domestically.
Can't play Shield. They can only play
club. Can't play Shield, but they can play club cricket.
Yeah. And so hoping on appeal they may get back to playing first class. It could happen. This is going to be appealed. There's two routes.
The other thing that bears mentioning is when they come back, Warner is basically banned for life from leadership roles.
Yes.
And Smithy has a 12-month ban from any leadership roles.
Which, to be honest, I don't have that much of a problem with that. Like, although I'm 1,000% behind him and the team, I know there have to be repercussions. And like, I get it. If you're the captain and you've let something like this happen on your watch, which is what's happened, it's like in business, someone has to take the fall. But I do think that we are stupid in not allowing them to play domestic cricket. Because if they play domestic cricket, people might actually turn up to the Shield games because no one goes. And, plus at the end of this ban, we've got World Cup and Ashes. Like, seriously, 7 weeks afterwards.
I feel like that ban at domestic Shield cricket is more just to stop them from earning a good wage.
But you know what I would do if I was them?
Like, neither of them need a wage. Bancroft's the only one that's really
hurt. I would offer, if I was in their position and it got struck out on appeal, because it could, because they're going to challenge it. Like, Warner is definitely going to.
They will, but because of the media, I doubt they're going to let anything through.
Maybe, but I would offer to play for a dollar or donate my money to charity to play the Shield. Like, if they don't need the whatever the Shield money is. I'm more about keeping their skill levels up. Like, I agree there's punishments. They've already... Both of them already lost million-plus dollar contracts.
Oh, yeah. Endorsement deals have gone.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I just... But something... Like, they did something wrong, Stu. But it's the media, the way they whipped it up, and then Fox Sports...
But look,
were
for
like,
me,
you know,
it's such a stupid thing to do wrong.
Yeah. Well, it was, yeah, the sandpaper on a ball. It's a bad look.
Like, yeah, it was so obviously, like, they can't hide that when they're on the field.
But you know, Thad Duplessis has been found guilty twice, and he's a South African captain. And he was found guilty out here, ball tampering.
Yeah.
Like, and this is the thing, the Indian cricket boards, Tendulkar was found guilty, Dravid, and they went home, they left the tours, and their board just collapsed in behind them. The South African board did nothing. And Thad Duplessis has been found guilty twice. Now, I'm not saying that we should do nothing, but we've overreacted. Big time.
I think they're trying to make an example out of them. Like, we held our cricketers to a high level. We expect them to be professional.
But you know, they've all been ball tampering for years on all sides. Like, that's the sad truth. Like, Michael Vaughan came out and said in the 2005 Ashes, they were ball tampering. Marcus Troscoffic was working on the ball, and it was swinging like a fucking banana, if you remember that Ashes, yeah. The one we lost. Like, so Imran Khan is on record. He taught Waqar Yunus and Wasim Akram how to ball tamper, and both were found guilty, by the way. This isn't something that the Aussies have just...
No, it's not new. You know, no. But I feel like Australians just... We frown upon this as a...
I also think... We'll say this. I think Australians like a witch hunt as well. And I think they like a scapegoat. And I think there's been a lot of tarring and feathering. And considering that, like, Smithy is, like, one of our best players of all time. And a pretty much, from all reports, a pretty good guy as well. Like, this has happened on his watch. He wasn't Sam Prapper in the ball. He wasn't aware of it. Then he was aware of it as it's happening.
I feel like he was aware of it at some level.
Yeah.
Like, well, if what you're saying is true and ball tampering is that prevalent, he's not. He's going into the woods.
Well, I think the sandpaper may have been taking it to a whole new level. Because normally they use stuff like mints, lollies, they get the ball sticky on one side, they do all sorts of tricks. Like, Michael Atherton was found guilty in the 90s. He wrote a column slamming our players for ball tampering. It's like, you were found guilty in the 90s of the same offence. Have you forgotten this?
Yeah.
And he didn't resign as captain, and he didn't get any suspension. I don't know. We're trying to make an example, but I also think we're trying to cover ourselves big time at Cricket Australia.
Big time. The other thing is, this media attention in general is good for the game of cricket at the moment.
Yeah. I'll be watching tonight. Like, I'll say this. Like, I get some mistakes been made. And punishments have to be handed out. And I would have been happy with the missing the England tour and the Indian tours and maybe even the Indian series out here. Like, I'm more annoyed that they can't play first-class cricket because I think that's their livelihood. And I think for Smithy, it's too harsh a punishment. And Bancroft, the junior player, he's obviously in an awkward position.
Well, he's got the lesser. He's got a 9-month
ban. 9-month. But they're banning him from playing county. Or, I think it's interesting because the bans don't apply to... You could go and play county cricket if the current cricket wants you. The ban is only on Australian domestic. But Somerset pulled the deal on Bancroft. But I would hope that on appeal they may get that overturned and it would make sense for Smithy to go and play county cricket so that he's got his eye in. I mean, I'm looking at the World Cup and the Ashes, dude. Like, fuck it. Like, I'm not going to sit around and go, well, let's crucify Steve Smith. Like, I think the media's done enough of that in the last 3 or 4 days, frankly. I mean, did you see the guy at the press conference?
Honestly, I feel like when we get to them, we're going to lose them pretty substantially, given that our two best batsmen are gone now.
Well, they'll be back. Well, I mean, Warner...
Because I don't think they'll be back.
Oh, I think Smithy will be back for the World Cup and Ashes.
No, I don't. I think we're going to lose them substantially. Then there's going to be a public outright to kind of get them back on the team.
I think Smithy will be playing in the first warm-up game after his ban, dude, because I think they will have rehabilitated him by then. And he will be training by then. Like, Warner may be gone. Completely gone.
Well, I mean, he was in the back half of this.
Huge instigator of it. He's already disliked by them. Apparently the team was up in arms with him because he was throwing them under the bus big time. You know, who knows? We love a scapegoat, Stu. And, no, I think Smithy will be back, for sure. I'll be highly surprised if he's not playing the World Cup. Because, A, he's our best player. And, B, he served his fucking ban, which is a lot longer than anyone's ever been banned before for this offence. So he will have done his time by then. I think, I mean, Bancroft's a fringe player. I feel a bit sorry for him. He's already a fringe player. His performances were barely keeping him
mixed clean
before
best.
This. Yeah, exactly. Like, Warner, a lot of good performances, but he's always been on the nose. So,
but Warner's best performances are a couple of years behind him.
Yeah.
Like, he's on the downhill for his career.
Yeah, he's kind of that part of his career where you've plateaued.
Yeah.
Whereas Smithy's still going up.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, I mean, I'm sure this has been fascinating for our US listeners. But it does prove, Stu, that David does have emotions hidden in his heart. I like
that it takes cricket to get any kind of emotion out of
Dave. I was playing my Ashes cricket sulkily this morning. I didn't drop Smithy or Warner, by the way. Or myself. I'm in the team.
Of course you are.
I'm not very good. I'm in the team. Luckily, I'm a selector as well. Because my 11 off fucking 30 balls, which I often score. Because you know, I don't like take any risks, you, and then I take one risk and get out. And I'm like, why did I take that risk? You know, just not good enough. Now, Stu, turning away from cricket, you've got a site that you've been watching on
YouTube. Yeah, I've got a quick shout out. There's this absolutely brilliant YouTube site that I honestly recommend that fans of this show go and check out. The channel is called Film Joy, one word. And this series of videos is called Movies with Mikey. They're sitting at about 100,000 subscribers, so they are a solid-sized YouTube.
They're even bigger than our Signal of Doom YouTube feed.
They might even be bigger than us.
They actually are.
he's got a series of videos where he breaks down a bunch of films, and a lot of what he does is the comic booky kind of films.
Sure.
And just popular films that come out.
And you said, what's the biggest one?
I'm not sure what the biggest one is. I watched a bunch of them recently. The one on The Dark Knight absolutely blew my mind.
Oh, the Christopher Nolan movie?
The Christopher Nolan Dark Knight, where he broke down Heath Ledger's performance as one of the best performances of all time.
I agree. It's very, very, very strong.
It's incredible.
And you watch it after not seeing that movie for many years. Like, you know, 5 years ago, but you're watching it. Yeah. And Jesus Christ, he's good in this.
You still get chills.
Yeah.
But he breaks down a bunch of other things. Like, there is a video on how to make a shared universe and why Marvel has succeeded and DC hasn't.
Warner should watch the video, mate.
Warner should watch that video. And why the Dark Universe flopped completely. Like, he looks at all the nuances of this.
So badly.
Yeah, it was just terrible.
It was maybe one of the worst, like, big blockbusters I've seen since Fantastic Four, frankly. Yeah. Yeah, it was awful.
Like, so these videos, their goal is to get you to think about something you've seen 10, 20 times and think about it differently.
A different take.
Completely different take.
Were you saying he sees the Joker as the hero in The Dark Knight? You can watch
He makes an argument that you could view that movie as the Joker is the villain and trying to save Gotham, and Batman is the chaotic element that gets thrown in there.
Got it. So the Joker is trying to save Gotham and Batman's the agent of chaos. Is that right?
Yeah. Joker never hurt anyone that wasn't a criminal. Like, at the beginning of the movie, he steals from a mob boss and kills a bunch of criminals in the process, and that funds his entire operation. Whereas Batman is blowing up cars, destroying buildings, driving through walls. He's got no idea whether there are people in those cars.
Yeah, Batman is very, how can I say?
At one point, he punches a police dog off a building. So, like, he killed an animal.
He killed an animal.
It's weird when you break this thing down. It's kind of fascinating.
Is it, which Batman movie is it that has the guns on the car? Is it the Nolan ones, or is it the... There is one Batmobile that has, like, guns on the car that's, like, firing on people.
Dark Knight, his motorcycle had guns on the front.
Yeah. Yeah, there is an interesting thing about Batman doesn't kill. Now, other than what he tends to do in the Batmobile, could probably kill a few people.
Exactly.
Like, people do die in car accidents, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that are caused by him. Yeah, I mean,
Wayne is obviously going to pay for all these damages and cover it up, but...
Yeah.
Like...
But if I went out and did that and they went, I'll pay for it, then the cops aren't going to be like, oh, that's okay, carry on.
Exactly right.
You were going to pay for it, Dave.
Exactly right. So it's a cool take on it. I'd really suggest you watch it.
Yeah, no, I will.
And there's quite a few others in there. Like, he did Ragnarok recently.
Cool.
And explained why it was so fun and what this means for the MCU. And it's a really brilliant channel. Film Joy is the channel.
Film Joy.
Movies with Mikey. There's like 50 videos in there.
No, definitely check that out. Fantastic. Stu. Now, Stu, I've got some news that broke, and I'm so disappointed. The Deadpool series helmed by Donald Glover has been cancelled due to, quote, creative differences.
Yeah, this popped up a few days ago.
Now, Stu, I'm obviously very unhappy because, if you recall, I did research on this.
Yeah, this was one of your big...
Yeah, I did that, 15 minutes of research where I found out he was voicing it. Well, no longer. Remember we were debating whether he was voicing it? And I believe you were saying he couldn't because he was black or something. Like, you had some outrageous comments, which I didn't...
Yeah, which you took completely out of context and started saying it like you're saying it because he's black.
You're going racial.
Yeah, which is Dave trying to stir the pot.
Definitely. Now, what are you saying, Stu? And then he tweeted, kind of like, he's been fairly reactionary to the cancellation. He's not really taken it very well, has he, old Donald Glover?
Yeah, this is not a happy split here. Donald Glover went to Twitter and basically the first tweet he said was, for the record, I'm not too busy to do Deadpool.
Because people were saying, oh, he's too busy.
I think, yeah, some rumors were saying Childish Gambino is making records and he's, his schedule's not fitting in.
The
and
five people out there who are listening to Childish Gambino.
He's actually insanely popular. Yeah. He's got millions.
Is he seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he is good songs. At what he does.
Yeah. I like Donald Glover. I've always liked him from Community. But he does have Atlanta, the show. Like, he's a showrunner on that. He's a creator of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he is a busy guy. He's got a bunch of things running. So after that, he tweets basically the entire script for what was the finale of the season one.
Yeah.
However, this had been edited substantially since the breakup.
Sure. To make it more sort of like tie-in with the breakup, yeah?
Yeah, because there's a few parts where he talked basically to the audience directly in the same way Deadpool would break the fourth wall.
Sure.
But mentioning something about a Marvel split and all this sort of stuff. The full script is online. Try and find it. It is maybe worth a read. It gives you an idea of what the show was going to be.
Have you read it?
I have read it.
And what was it going to be, Stu? Like, funny or...?
A lot of it's kind of tongue-in-cheek humour.
Yeah.
It fits with Deadpool.
Is it action as well, or is it more just clowning around?
A little bit of action, yeah.
Okay.
So in the one that... In this script, they had Deadpool trying to protect the last northern white rhino.
Oh, they
died in the news this week.
Yeah, it's very sad.
But he was paid in Bitcoin to protect it. And the running gag throughout the show is he'd check his phone, the Bitcoin alert would go off, and the Bitcoin would be through the roof, and he'd be all for it.
Yeah.
And he'd protect it with his life. And then the alarm would go off, and he's like, well, it's not worth it anymore. So
I find that funny.
Just that's go and good. Kill it.
That's clever.
And it was funny. Yeah. And then...
That's very Deadpool.
It is very Deadpool. Yeah. Like, it fits perfectly.
Yeah.
However, like, halfway through, it starts getting a little weird. He makes references directly to the audience. And then he attacks Donald Trump as president, which I thought was pretty funny.
Did you hear that the Roseanne show is back? Michelle was mentioning it. And do you know that she's apparently like a massive Trump supporter in the show and in real life? It's quite counter-programming, you would think. I wasn't aware of that. But like in real life, apparently she's a Trump supporter. But in the show, apparently Roseanne... I'm going to check it out because I used to watch a bit of the show without loving it.
I mean, look, the guy didn't get elected for no reason. Like, there is a massive support base for him in
America. There's fans out there, for sure. But generally not in Hollywood's my point. Hollywood are, you know...
No, but I mean, think about... if you think about it from a ratings point of view, this is the only show that's openly supporting him to that extent.
It's kind of counter-programming.
He's going to get a massive chunk of the audience. Like, so, who knows? Like, if it fits with the demographic...
I just thought it was interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, that's all I'm saying. But, sorry, you were saying... Sure, I interrupted there because I just remembered about Roseanne. So, Deadpool's anti-Trump kind of fits in with Deadpool's kind of chaotic personality.
You know, that felt like something that had been rewritten.
Oh, okay.
Because at that point it starts getting very political. He starts attacking Marvel.
Jesus, really?
Yeah.
He went after Marvel. He actually went after Marvel. Like, he's quite bitter about this, it seems.
That's what it came off as.
So what's the reason then? I don't understand the reason for the show's cancellation then.
Nothing's come out. Nothing's been confirmed. It's kind of heavily thought that Donald Glover is difficult to work with. They're saying he's one of these people that is great at what he does.
A bit of a diva, as they say?
Yeah, the troubled genius diva kind of thing comes to mind.
The troubled genius. The Orson Welles of fucking animation.
Where this guy thinks he's so good that he doesn't have to abide by schedules or, you know, he just doesn't take direction well.
Yeah, did he get his scripts in? Like, animation is a lot of work. You know?
And you've got to work quite closely with a lot of people.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah, it's a very collaborative process, animation.
It is. Like, you've got to work really closely with the animators, with the artists.
You've got to be quite flexible, too.
With the other talent, the voiceover talent. Like, there's a lot of moving parts. Same as in any TV show.
Yeah. Yeah, but in animation, it's a lot of work. A lot of work.
It's a lot of behind-the-scenes work, which you kind of don't realise.
It's expensive, too.
So they kind of... They said they parted ways on creative differences.
It sounds like...
They're saying it's unlikely that it was something like Donald wanted to swear more or less and they didn't let him with censor rules. And it was more likely his attitude towards the show in general and...
Hmm. Well, it's a shame. As a Deadpool fan, I was looking forward to it, but I still think we could get a Deadpool show in the future without Donald Glover. I don't think he was like, you know, he's not the only person out there pushing the Deadpool wagon, you know?
No, absolutely. And like people have been saying in the last week that this fits right now with current shows that are running out of steam.
Right.
Things like Archer, which has been hugely popular in the past,
sure.
is slowly winding down now.
Sure.
And that's been basically like an R-rated
funny show.
Animated,
very funny show.
Yeah. Aimed at an adult audience that's yeah. like it's perfect.
BoJack Horseman? Watch that?
I haven't seen it personally, but I've heard good things.
I've watched a lot of it. I haven't watched all of it. It's funny.
Yeah.
Very funny, actually. Very dark, dry humor.
Yeah.
And it's consistent as well. Much like Archer. I also like Archer. I haven't watched Archer in a while, but I watched like the first, say, three seasons.
Okay.
It's a funny show too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but BoJack Horseman,
I feel like Archer is on the downhill. Like I think I watched six or seven seasons.
That's been going for a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, it must be up to around 10 years now.
You should check out BoJack Horseman, man.
But like shows like that could easily, like you could take the same team of people.
Yes.
And run them from that project into a Deadpool.
Yeah.
Kind of run it in the same channel, time slot kind of thing. Like it would work almost perfectly in that.
It's very adult in that environment. Kind of audience. I was going to say, I always liked Archer's how do you say it, anachronistic sort of like animation style. It's almost old-fashioned.
Yeah.
You know, it really worked really well, I thought. I always thought it was a really funny show. I kind of got out of the habit of watching it, but I always enjoyed it.
Yeah.
BoJack is funny. It's out there. It's a little bit stoner humor mixed with a really kind of dark look at Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's darker than it appears, and he is very... He's the hero of the show, and he's quite unlikable on the surface, but you also sort of... You do feel for him as well. It's a real comment on society.
But see, that fits with Deadpool.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Where Deadpool has a lot of really dark humor at times.
Yeah, and quite a flawed main character. Like, Deadpool's
Absolutely.
Got plenty of flaws
Absolutely.
Which you can exploit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and you could probably go less sympathetic than perhaps the movies do. You know what I mean? You could make it a little bit darker, the humor. Because sometimes the humor in Deadpool is quite dark, depending on who's writing it. And other times it's more kind of irreverent and goofy. I could see a slightly more adult take on Deadpool mixed in with like a humour. Look, I hope that someone else picks the baton up because Donald Glover maybe wasn't the answer, you know. He does have a lot of other projects on as well. I know he says he's not busy, but he is involved in a lot of different spheres. You know what I'm saying, Stu?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's a busy guy. He's got a lot of fans in a lot of different areas.
Exactly.
Like, he has got acting, he has got stand-up, he has got his music.
Yeah.
And like, he's running in a bunch of different worlds at the moment.
Yeah, and he's running a whole show. Atlanta is a...
He's showrunning Atlanta.
Is like, he in that? I've never watched an episode of this Atlanta.
I haven't watched
how it. Many, it's fucking drink every time we mention on the show. It constantly comes up, because it's as he beats.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. But I believe his brother is involved as well. His brother is a showrunner on Atlanta as well. And I think his brother was involved with this as well, with Deadpool. I think they're kind
of... Yeah, the two of them were working together.
Yeah, that brother's riding the coattails, isn't he?
it sounds really like it, doesn't
it? It's like Nick Kyrgios' brother.
Like his mum pushed him and get your brother a job. And he's like, fine.
Yeah. It's like, it's drama in Entourage.
Yeah.
Is there a role for me, bro? You know there's a role for you, drama.
Yeah, exactly.
I always remember dramas like bragging about how he's on 90210, and they go, yeah, he plays the teacher who sexually molests Tori Spelling.
Yeah.
And Tori goes, classy drama, classy. But multiple seasons, the 90210 years, and then someone goes, yeah. now, Stu, more news coming out. This actually surprised me. X-Men Dark Phoenix and New Mutants have been delayed again. Dark Phoenix, which I'm looking forward to, moves from 2nd of November 2018 to 14th of Feb 2019. So a push of a few months. And
yeah, so it's around a four-month pushback there, a three-month push mark.
And New Mutants moves from, which had already been delayed, moves from February 2019.
Basically,
to
where
August.
Dark Phoenix has been moved to was a week from the New Mutants release date.
Well spotted, Stuart.
And because of that, they pushed New Mutants right back to the 2nd of August.
I think that this New Mutants thing is doomed, frankly.
So they've said that New Mutants is receiving massive reshoots because they're adding a whole other character.
Mm.
into the mix. So anything that has a team shot.
Who the fuck who? Like,
we don't know yet. Yeah, that hasn't been released. Yeah. There's been a lot of speculation.
But hilariously, no one knows. No one outside of like the X-Men fucking comic fans know any of these New Mutants. They're all fucking mysteries. And we were adding another one. Like,
well, I think it did. The dynamic for the show needed another character that had these attributes, and they weren't getting it.
Deadpool.
Deadpool, well, kind of like the idea that they had four mutants, but none of them had a sense of humor kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they needed someone with that sense of dark humor that fits.
Are you looking
show.
Forward to it at all? Because I'm not.
I'm hopeful, as always, but no, I don't think this is going
to
be any good.
Dark Phoenix I'm looking forward to. I want to see what Simon Kinberg does. He's been a writer on like Days of Future Past and a whole stack of the X-Men, a producer on all the X-Men movies. I'm excited to see Dark Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix feels like it's got a better shot at being a good movie.
Yeah.
Look, typically X-Men's at a 50-50 average here.
And their last one wasn't great, so the next one is better.
Normally the next one is better. But this is running with a whole new younger cast.
Sure. It's got your Sansa Stark in there and all those people.
Yeah, Sophie Turner's playing Jean Grey. It'll be interesting to see how they go. This is their first real shot at this.
Look, I'm looking forward to seeing what it's like. Like, I mean, that's a movie that
the only thing I'm slightly worried about is the delay. This delay, it feels unnecessary for something like Dark Phoenix.
Well, they were saying, the reports I heard, Stu, was that, I'm also concerned, the reports I heard was there are reshoots and they can't get the actors because Game of Thrones, for example, is shooting. How believable
both.
That is, I don't know.
That would affect both, because in New Mutants we have Maisie Williams, who plays Arya Stark.
Oh, is Maisie Williams in New Mutants?
Yes.
Okay.
She leads the cast in New Mutants.
Let's hope she performs some other role.
That's the reshoot thing that's causing the delays because of Game of Thrones.
She's in an episode of Doctor Who, and she acts exactly like she acts in Game of Thrones.
She hasn't got a huge range, but she's good at what she does.
She's good in Game of Thrones.
She's fine. I feel like neither of those two girls are going to be amazing breakout actors after Game of Thrones.
Oh, sorry, I was just laughing. Should you say girls, Stu, or young women?
No, I don't really fucking care.
I'm so sorry.
They're like 14, I don't care.
I don't know how old they are. They're young. Sorry, what did you say? I actually missed what you said because I was so busy.
Just giggling to yourself.
Picking you up on like minor linguistic points.
Neither of them are going to be breakout stars after Game of Thrones.
Oh,
I don't think
totally
either
great.
Of them are big enough acting talents.
Both of them are fucking lucky they got Game of Thrones.
Post Game of Thrones, they're not going to be huge.
You know what they'll be doing? Conventions.
I feel like Kit Harington is unluckily not going to be there because he tried and failed in things like Pompeii.
Right, really?
Which wasn't good.
No, I've not seen him in anything. Other than Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He's actually, I don't think he's that good, frankly. What's his role? Is it Jon Stark?
Jon Snow.
Jon Snow. I mean, he's good in Game of Thrones, but I'm not like, oh my God, like, fuck, this is the best acting I've ever seen. And, you know, people are swooning over him in the street like he's like this amazing looking guy. I've seen better, you know? But he's okay in Game of Thrones. But I agree with you. Neither of those girls are really.
Don't you mean women, Dave?
No, I deliberately said girls.
Yeah.
Neither of them are blowing me away that much. Like, I think they'll be doing the convention circuit, honestly.
They're going to be doing the convention circuit. Yeah. I feel like they're destined for short-term TV roles, honestly.
Sure. EastEnders.
But like, there's not a lot of actors in that show that weren't big going in that are going to be big coming out.
The one who seems to got the most bounce in terms of at least roles is Daenerys.
Yeah, although even her roles have been hit and miss.
No, she's been in projects, but they haven't exactly exploded. Like, she was in Terminator Genesis. She's in Solo.
She is in Solo. We'll see how that goes.
But no, she hasn't been in anything that's blown up. Like, Genesis was a flop.
Solo. I've got a feeling Solo is going to be a bit of a flop.
What, financially? Define flop, because it's not going to be a flop.
Well,
do you mean critically?
Potentially, financially. I feel like, look, it's got Star Wars money, but it's going to run out.
Can I take a bet on you right now? I will take a bet.
It's not going to do anywhere near what they want it to do.
Well, let's put some.
Like, if your definition of success is making a profit, which, by the way, you argue every week that Hollywood never makes a profit because of accounting.
No, if we agree to use Box Office Mojo as our guide in this matter. Okay, like,
they'll make a profit. Like, no doubt they're going to make a profit. That's a fucking stupid bet, Dave.
For a second, I thought I thought for a second you were saying it wouldn't, and I was happy to take your cash. By the way,
fucking stupid.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was just hoping you were. I thought you'd stumble into my
head. I have a degree in mathematics. I can fucking count.
Hey, buddy, I did a commerce for a finance degree. I did advanced econometrics over here, and it was fucking hard. It took all my
brains. I'm sure it was.
It was. Me on my calculator was like smoke coming out my ears during. I remember sitting there. It was at 9 o'clock. On a Friday or something, and I remember sitting there like in this bubble of concentration because I needed to concentrate so heavily because I found it so difficult. But I did, mate. I got credit in that, 66% or something. So look out.
Well done.
Thanks. 20 years ago, and I've gotten no smarter.
Yeah.
I've forgotten how I use the calculator. All the advanced buttons. I'm back to just plus and minus. Yeah.
Well done, Dave.
Thanks. I did something to say, but I forgot due to your outrageous comments.
I'm worried about it financially. I don't think it's going to make anywhere near what they want it to make.
Solo.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm interested. I feel like
Star Wars wants it to be a $800 million plus movie.
We're not even seeing any promos for it, really.
Because of all these reshoots, we're not getting the promotional run in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of going to struggle to get its name out. No. People are still so focused on Avengers and Deadpool.
Yeah.
No one's thinking for the month later will we get Solo.
No, you're right. I think it'll definitely be the lowest out of any of the movies.
From all the reports we're getting, Alden, the lead character, is okay but not good enough.
Doesn't surprise me.
Which is worrying.
Yeah. Exactly.
Finally,
we could have got that time machine and kind of got a 1981 Harrison and brought him to 2018 to do this role, paid him up enough in 2018 dollars and then taken him back to 81.
Even with a time machine, I don't think you can make that kind of money.
Or get him interested enough in the franchise.
Yeah, exactly. He was so happy to die. I've never known a character that big be so pleased to die in a movie.
So disinterested in the whole thing, isn't he? Really, like... It's just such
he's
a labor.
Like, Star Wars is coming back, Harrison. You shouldn't. He's like, only if you fucking kill me.
Yeah. The sigh is just palpable.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Stu, no changes announced for its other upcoming properties. Thankfully, Deadpool stays the same. 18th of May and Gambit, which I don't believe we'll ever see. 7th of June 2019. I don't think we'll see Gambit.
Look, nothing's been released in terms of changes for those movies. I'm still doubtful we're going to get
Gambit. They're not shooting, though, are they? They haven't started shooting Gambit.
Started shooting. I feel like they're waiting for Dark Phoenix to get through before they start looking at anything
else.
Could they
not be thinking of putting him in one of these movies? See, if I was the studio...
That's one of the rumours for the cameo in Deadpool.
Yeah.
I'm highly doubtful.
But even if you put him in Dark Phoenix, it might make some sense because Dark Phoenix is more X-Men-centric. Deadpool's X-Men, but in its own kind of like little sphere... If you put Gambit in Dark Phoenix as kind of like a key supporting character, the audience might buy in a bit better because he's in the X-Men universe. Like Gambit is very much an X-Men. You know, he doesn't generally have super long adventures by himself. He's generally in his best stuff. He's with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Just an idea.
Look, it's possible. We haven't heard anything.
Nothing.
Normally with something that big, you would see the paparazzo getting a photograph of Channing Tatum on a set somewhere.
Very true.
And they'd pick up something like, he's working with Fox. Could this be Gambit?
Yeah.
Like clickbait kind of news. And we're not getting any of that.
Nothing. All we ever get is Channing Tatum still involved. Like,
and typically, there hasn't really been many cameos that haven't been leaked to some extent.
No, I agree. No, it was just an idea, that was all. Well, Stu, you've continued on with your Black Panther box office rundown becoming a weekly feature on this show.
Yeah, because every week it kind of breaks new records. So this week became the highest grossing superhero film in the US.
Mm-hmm.
It passed Avengers 1 and 2.
Did it really?
In the US.
That's impressive.
Insanely impressive. It's made like $650-ish million in the US alone.
Wow.
It is number 3 of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5 at all time.
Sure. Behind Avatar, Jurassic World, Titanic.
Yeah. So worldwide, the two Avengers films are above it.
Yep.
But not by much.
Okay.
There's only about 20-ish mil before it catches up and takes over Jurassic World and Titanic domestically.
That is very impressive.
When you are making more money than Titanic in the US, you have done something right.
Oh, 100%. It's
unprecedented.
I think we'll get a sequel.
Yeah, we're getting a sequel. It's just crazy that it's doing that well.
Yeah, right time, right place, right movie, I think.
I mean, Marvel's just loving it, aren't they?
Oh,
Because every week, Black Panther's getting more attention. In the States, Infinity War posters and banners and billboards have started going up. And all of them heavily feature Black Panther front and center. Whereas typically it was RDJ.
Sure, yeah. Now, it'll be interesting to see. I'm astounded by the numbers. Not that the numbers are high, that doesn't astound me, but just how high, I think, is...
Exactly. No one expected it to be this successful. Everyone was saying it's going to be good.
Yeah.
But we're all expecting, like, another Thor
Ragnarok. Don't forget the tracking that was putting it at, like, 60 or 70.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The people who are doing the tracking on the programs need to be replaced, because they've failed here so massively.
I mean, yeah, but there was no indication this was going to be that big.
But isn't that what they're fucking tracking? Because haven't they got, like, algorithms that are showing how stuff popping off on the internet? Because there was plenty of hype and talk about Black Panther before it came out.
Yes, but only in the circles that were previously associated with comic book films. Is typically a white male
audience.
But
don't they look at pre-sales? Like, I mean, there must have been some sort of a sign.
But this movie had moderate to good pre-sales. It didn't absolutely crush it.
Okay.
What happened was it was released. It had a good first week, a really good first week.
Yeah.
And then word of mouth got out there. And then black audiences and female audiences and audiences that aren't typical comic book
Very
fans.
Very casuals got involved.
Flew to it and told all their friends to go and see it, and they went repeat viewings.
I've got a question for you then. Do you think Infinity War will do these numbers?
Yes.
I do, actually. So it's going to be two slam dunks in a row.
I honestly think Marvel is just going to absolutely crush it this year.
Wow.
This is going to be their second billion-dollar movie.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, good for them.
Like, the franchise as a whole, I think, has made just under $14.5 billion for Disney.
Wow.
At the box office. And they're going to add another $1.5 billion in Infinity War in a month's time.
Just another $1.5 bill on top.
Just casually adding another $1.5 billion.
He needs a calculator to work it all out now.
Hit the $15 billion mark, which is just crazy.
I love it. It's funny. It is funny. Now, Stu, Marvel have officially announced Captain Marvel's in production after they began filming last week. I did see some set photos of Brie Larson during the week.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of videos released as well where she's in the costume and she's... in the video that I saw, she's like running up and down a staircase with people falling beside her and a little action sequence that they filmed.
Okay. Now, principal cast including Lee Pace, who plays Ronan from... Is that Ronan the Accuser?
Yeah, the villain from Guardians of the Galaxy.
And I always
obviously this is set before Guardians.
Yeah, in the 90s.
In the 90s.
I felt in Guardians, he got really shortchanged. Like, he didn't have a major role.
He's always listed as one of the worst villains in the MCU.
Oh, is he?
And I think partly it was the writing of that character in that movie.
Well, it was just blink and you miss it, kind of, wasn't it?
It wasn't a well-written character, and he kind of played him all right.
Yeah.
It was a bit of both. Like,
is it the same actor?
Yeah, Lee Pace acted... it's the same actor that played him in Guardians.
Okay.
So he's reprising his role as Ronan, but like an earlier Ronan.
And surely he'll have a bigger role.
Well, we're kind of expecting him to... This is where he becomes that obsessed with... traditional Kree values.
I don't even remember him in Guardians, to be honest. I didn't even remember. I was saying, where are the Krees? And you're like, he was a Kree. I'm like,
they've had multiple Kree in both Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and in the MCU.
Where?
Ronan and his.
What do they look like, Stu? Are they just blue?
They're blue. They're also like white human colored Kree. It's similar to our. Like black and white people, they've got blue and our version of white.
Okay, all right. Are they like humanoid?
Basically humanoid.
So I'm trying to remember because I don't think he must have had a big role. I mean, I know I have got a shit memory, but was he just like a blue guy talking a little bit? I don't really remember him that well in the movie.
Go and watch it. There's a few scenes where, like in the opening, he's coming out of that black bath and getting dressed, and they put war paint on his face and the helmet.
That's ringing a bell.
And then, he carries that massive hammer. He's talking to Thanos.
Yeah, okay. No, I don't remember. Okay. But he was a bit bigger than a normal human, wasn't he? Wasn't he sort of slightly taller or something?
Similar size to, like, Chris Pratt and Star-Lord. Like, it was...
All right. So, so we've clarified that. Now, who is the rest of the cast? So, Agent Coulson's going to come back.
Well, this is before he died in The Avengers. So,
He got reborn in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., didn't he?
He has, but he hasn't. He was never reintroduced to the MCU.
Yeah, okay.
And there's been no hint that he's back to MCU fans.
Okay.
Unless you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you wouldn't know.
Alive. You'd think he's done.
But yeah, Clark Gregg is back as Agent Coulson. Dimon Hounsou is back. He had a minor role in Guardians of the Galaxy, but he is a bigger character than he got.
Okay. Who?
He was the one in that famous scene that says, drop the orb, and he says, and Star-Lord's like, haven't you heard of me? He says, who?
Oh, yeah. I know the guy you're talking about then, yeah.
The black actor that kind of captures Star-Lord at the very beginning with the orb.
Yeah, he kind of does a face when he's like, yeah, I get it, because it was the gag more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's in there reprising his role from Guardians.
Okay.
He's quite a successful actor. He was in Fast and Furious 7, I think, as the villain.
Okay.
So he's had some quite big roles, so he's reprising his role. And we know there's other big characters coming back, but names haven't been released.
We know Samuel L. Jackson's definitely going to be there.
Sam Jackson is there in a pretty major role.
I'm really looking forward to this movie. To be honest, this is one that I'm actually genuinely excited for.
Absolutely. Like, this is one of my favourite characters of all time, Captain Marvel.
Yeah, but it's the female Captain Marvel, Stu. I know you...
Same
Captain
difference.
Marvel over there.
No, Captain Marvel. Like,
don't you say Marvel?
Yeah, they're two different characters. I'm not talking about Captain Marvel.
Oh, you're not talking about Captain Marvel.
What if I talk about him? I'd say Captain Marvel, you dumb cunt. When I'm saying Captain Marvel,
it's not even a language, Stu.
Did you mean Peter? Is that what you keep saying Marvel? But do you mean Peter? And I'm like, no.
I wasn't aware that you were such a big fan of Captain Marvel or Marvel.
I'm not. You're the only person bringing up Marvel. You're the only one talking about him.
Okay,
right
but now. So I'm asking you. So have you read and followed Captain Marvel?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, see, I didn't
listen, Dave.
I didn't realize that. What the Kelly Pseudoconic run?
Or,
okay, well, it's just to me. I've never heard you mention. I know you're obsessed with the original, you know, Captain Marvel with the death of Captain Marvel and all that
you
stuff.
You need to start listening this episode, Dave.
Stu, I've had a very tough week.
You get sidetracked and run with your own story.
I've had a very tough week. Now, okay, so it just feels like you're hopping on the bandwagon. That's what I'm noticing from you. Because I've said before on the show that, like, I haven't read a lot of Captain Marvel current at all. Although I do quite like her. But I've never heard you hop on the bandwagon, but suddenly you're on the little bandwagon and it's like a little pony and you're riding it, I'm finding. It seems very kind of like, can I say, I don't know what the word is, convenient.
I mean, if there's been a bandwagon for 5 years, then yeah, I was on it about 5 years ago.
So I took a time machine back Doom style. I'd find you cranking open a copy of Kelly Pseudoconic's Captain Marvel.
Yeah, like thinking, oh, this is going to be big in 5 years. I better get started now.
Get started because Dave's going to.
I'm starting this bandwagon. That's what I'm doing right now.
Because I'm renowned for being a bandwagon hopper on her.
Oh yeah,
I love hopping on a bandwagon. And I'm noticing now. I'm kind of accusing you that
I've read quite a bit of that style. So Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel,
okay.
Captain Marvel, like all of that style.
Yeah, that I think there's some truth there.
I have read quite a bit of
Captain Marvel.
Absolutely.
I've tell you what I've done. I played a lot of Ms. Marvel when she was Ms. Marvel, before she was Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
In the Ultimate Alliance game, she was very powerful.
That counts.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, she's one of the most powerful characters in the MCU.
Yeah, no, she was. Has she still got all the same powers that she had as Ms. Marvel?
Well, we don't. I mean, MCU typically changes power sets to fit with the rest of the characters.
Okay.
They normally lower the power set.
She could do an energy blast in the game.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
They probably won't be doing that in the movies.
Why? Just to piss me off?
They normally, typically so far in the MCU, underpower their heroes. It kind of increases the struggle they go through and makes them...
Yeah.
You kind of root for them a little bit more because they're less powerful.
Yeah, no, I get it. And she can fly as well, can't she?
Yeah, she can fly, yeah.
She's pretty cool.
Which I think they will keep.
Hmm.
But I think they're basically just going to give her... your standard flight, super strength, super speed.
Sure. Is she telepathic as well?
Not really.
No. It's more just like, okay, she can fly, she's super strong.
Like in the comics, she can absorb energy, she can shoot energy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She can do something like that, can't she?
Yeah. Like she's got energy manipulation.
Right.
I don't know.
Quite a powerful character, really.
Oh, massively powerful. She can also survive in space.
Yes.
I don't know how much of that they're going to do in the MCU.
They might do the old Superman where she can survive in space for a little bit. You know,
yeah,
like can breathe a little bit, but then she needs to get back to Earth.
I mean, it's kind of like Scarlet Witch in the MCU is so underpowered compared to the comic books.
Sure.
In the comic books, she can control reality.
Ridiculously powered.
Yeah, insanely powerful, has broken reality a couple of times.
Crazy as well. Nuts.
Mentally unhinged, yeah.
Very nuts.
But they, like, dialed her way down to she can move things with her mind.
Yeah, she can just do sneaky bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of makes the struggle a little more... You relate... more well, with a character like that.
Let's put a note down. Episode 55, Stu declares suddenly he's a Captain Marvel fan.
Suddenly, yeah. I've never said that on the show before.
55... No, you've said Captain Marvel.
I've said both.
Many
before.
Times you've gone on about...
I have said Captain Marvel, but that doesn't mean I haven't said Captain Marvel as well.
I think you've changed horses in midstream. You realise that Captain Marvel's done enough.
Hang on. What do you mean changing?
I'm a fan of both.
I am a fan of both. I have always been a fan of both.
I wish I was telepathic so I could get the answers because I don't like what I'm hearing.
You'd listen and you can go back and check the tapes, Dave. You've got them all.
Yeah, maybe I will.
You've even got bits of episode one, the pre-released.
Yeah, maybe
never heard
episode one. She's like, oh, I've never read that before. That's why
I never got released. Yeah,
in a courtroom, I'd bring that up.
Go for now, it, Dave.
Try. All right, Stu. A few new cast members of Deadpool 2 have confirmed their roles. Terry Crews. Now, Stu, I know I'm supposed to know this, but what's Terry Crews known for? Is he a wrestler?
He was a pro NFL player.
Oh, was he?
Okay. He played, I mean, it's not called Gridiron in the States, but Gridiron to the rest of the world.
Yeah. NFL, yeah.
So he was a pro NFL player for a little while.
Okay.
He then went into acting. I don't think he's done wrestling.
No.
Kind of physique for
wrestling. I knew he had done something, but okay, so he was an NFL player.
Yeah, he was. He was a pro NFL player. Okay. Since then, mainly comedy roles, big on things like Brooklyn Nine-Nine at the moment.
So, okay, a bit of TV and stuff.
Yeah, and also hugely famous for his Old Spice commercials.
Ah, and that's where I know him from. Yes, thank you. That's the link. He was the Old Spice guy.
So that's where most people know him from. Yes. When he's doing the Old Spice.
That's the link.
He's just yelling power at the screen.
Okay, so he's... And what's he playing? Shoot Bedlam.
Yeah, Bedlam. One of the founding members of X-Force.
And Lewis Tan from Iron Fist is playing Shatterstar. Shatterstar is another Rob Liefeld creation from the early 90s. Remind me, who was he in Iron Fist so I can lock it down?
Was the Asian martial artist villainy character.
Oh, the one who fought, like, the Daughter of the Dragon and all that. Yeah. Like, okay, he was good.
Yeah, he was.
So he was very good, actually. He was one of the best things of the show,
yeah,
I thought.
Absolutely.
I thought his arc with her was actually really interesting. In a show that I found boring.
Oh, hang on, are you talking about the mentor? Is that who you're talking about? Because he had a much bigger role, and it wasn't the mentor.
The guy I'm thinking of was the one who was teaching her, and then he turned out to be evil.
No, that guy wasn't Asian and is not a martial artist.
He was a martial artist.
He was white as hell, though.
Was he?
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember. I mean, it's hard for me. I'm trying to remember things from, 2 years ago that I can barely remember.
Yeah.
So who was he in the fucking show then? The mentor. Come on, you can try a bit harder than that.
No, he's not the mentor.
So who was he then?
He got taught by the hand, and he was their kind of lead assassin-y character in Iron Fist.
I'm going to have to...
He fought Iron Fist a couple of times.
Okay. All right, I'm going to have to Google. But where are you on the casting, Stu? Is he any good? Can he do the job?
Terry Crews is the biggest dot. Is going to be a great...
I'm actually happy with that.
Fan casting.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of people are happy to see Terry Crews.
It'd be funny to do an Old Spice joke at his expense, too.
Oh, you'd have to imagine they're going to shout power or something funny
that.
Especially in Deadpool, it works. Like, those little references.
Yeah, you can get away with
this.
This
is the best place to do it.
Yeah.
Lewis Tan is far lesser known. Like, he's not a known actor. He's had a couple of big roles. Iron Fist is a pretty substantial TV show.
Sure. Yeah.
But Shatterstar is a cool character for him.
Definitely.
I think this is good. This is great casting.
And it's such an iconic-y sort of early 90s character that was big for 1 second, you know?
But it fits with X-Force. Like, that's the perfect... That's what X-Force is there for.
Yep.
It's to introduce lesser-known mutants into canon in the MCU Netflix shows and that kind of realm. Anything that works, they will put in the major X-Force and X-Men run. Anything that doesn't work, they can drop off, kill.
Yeah, you're right. If he pops here, he could
be... This feels like a testing ground for, C-rated mutants.
No, there's definitely an element of this Deadpool 2 where they're going more commercial than the first one, in that I think they're trying to world-build a little bit, you know?
Well, I think they're now aware that this concept works and it can spawn a mini universe inside the X world.
Yeah, definitely.
So now they're kind of running with weird left of center ideas that they might be able to expand.
I brought up Louis Tan while we're talking. Yeah, I've got absolutely no memory whatsoever of this guy being in Iron Fist, but he looks fine. There's a shirtless pic. He's definitely ripped. Yeah, he gets my tick of approval.
Yeah, like he's not a well-known actor.
No, but this is, well, this is how it could
be. He's good at what he does. I mean, this is a physical role.
I know Shatterstar more visually, and he's a pretty out there kind of visually.
Yeah, and we have seen, like, they've dialed down the costumes for all of these characters.
Right, yes.
None of them are wearing, like, the black and white spandex that they're known for.
Yeah.
It is more of a militaristic, functional suit, same as what Deadpool went through.
This guy's in Into the Badlands as well, which is on Netflix. He's promoting on his Twitter, so I assume he's in it.
Not massive roles, but...
No, but he's around.
He's definitely around. He's working. He is a solid actor.
Okay, now, Stu, James Wan has taken to Twitter to dispel rumours that we were going to get an Aquaman trailer last weekend.
Yeah, so last weekend the internet was kind of being flooded with these clickbait kind of pages saying we're going to be getting an Aquaman trailer.
Were you behind them, Stu?
I actually completely... I had no idea what was going on until afterwards.
When I was grieving for Australian cricket.
When he dispelled it, I was like, what is he dispelling? Yeah. Oh, that was the thing. Okay.
Did you know who shot JFK while he's working on the conspiracy theories?
So James Wan sent out three tweets following each other back to back. And they read, "Hey friends, I usually do my best to avoid internet noises, especially fabricated distractions, but a teaser trailer going out this weekend was never in the books, despite what some claim. It's not because of anyone or any nefarious reason holding it back. It's me. I'm simply not ready to share yet. This movie is filled to the gills with VFX, and the process is as slow and laborious as a sea slug. Yes, even shots for the trailers take forever to do, and I refuse to put out anything that might be considered subpar. I know it seems like nothing much is brewing above the surface, but I can assure you we're working nonstop under the waves.
A lot of you.
And yes, I plan to use oceanic puns and references every chance
I was going
to
say that. Like, it was like, yeah, it was a lot of under the waves, the surface.
Yeah, sea slug, all that sort of stuff.
Working it fairly hard there.
Basically, and I agree, they're in such a tricky spot in that the DCU has such a negative press behind it.
Sure, sure.
James Wan is a seriously good director and a great get for DC at the moment.
Definitely.
He is making sure everything is perfect before we see anything.
Yeah, because people are going to be so critical because they're in such a slump.
Exactly. You can notice it substantially even in the Marvel trailers.
Yeah.
If you go from that leaked Avengers footage.
Yeah.
That came out in Comic-Con time ago.
Yeah.
A few of those scenes have been put in the most recent trailer.
Mm.
And you can see significant differences in the background, in the CGI, from the first trailer to now. Like, they are still rendering it now.
Mm. And his movie doesn't come out until November, does it?
It doesn't come out until November.
He wants to get past all the noise of Infinity War and all that stuff, you know?
They are hoping to get a trailer out by Infinity War because you want to have a trailer running before Infinity War. Every big movie wants to have a trailer in that cinema.
Sure, sure. They need a good trailer, I think. Aquaman. It needs something.
Yeah, exactly right. But it is heavy CGI, if you think about it.
Yeah, no.
Like, even in Justice League...
Everything's underwater, you know.
Everything underwater and everything in the Atlantis that they're running in is CGI.
Yeah.
But even his battle armor and his suit was CGI throughout... Justice League.
I've got a question. This is going to... You're going to laugh at this question. In Atlantis, when they're in the throne room, are they in water?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, I never knew that. I was like, or they got living like little bubbles. But, or is it... So if we were in Atlantis now, it'll be all water. We'd be just talking in water.
Well, other than Aquaman himself, I was under the impression that the others can't survive above water for that long.
Maybe.
Like, they are aquatic creatures.
You don't
creatures.
See much of them, do you? You see a little bit of Mera. She can, but even she's got some sort of story.
Like, I haven't read a lot of Aquaman. I don't know. I'm comparing it largely to Namor that I've read more of than Aquaman.
Sure.
And I know Namor because he's a half.
So they're more like fish, you're saying?
Well, yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, mermaid-y kind of people.
Can they? Like, a fish just flops and dies.
Yeah, like they can survive for a few minutes or 10 minutes or something.
Sure, choking, though.
But they can't breathe air.
Yeah.
Good. Whereas Arthur Curry can breathe air.
Actually,
and
that's a very good point.
Breathe underwater.
Although you do see Stormmaster, but he's often wearing like a helmet and stuff, so maybe he's got some stuff in there to help him.
Yeah. So Aquaman, because he is human, like a mutated
half human,
human,
half Atlantean.
Yeah. He can breathe air. He can breathe underwater.
Yeah.
So yeah, everything underwater is completely underwater. There's no air chambers under there.
I always think it's hilarious when we start talking about Aquaman. I always flash back to Entourage when James Cameron directed it. and Vinny was Aquaman. And the big joke was like, and he pulled out of Aquaman 2. It's a big plot point in the show. Yeah, okay. Well, look, I think probably James Wan's probably correct here. Try to get his ducks in a row because they can't afford another failure.
No, they can't. They're basically on their last life here.
Exactly. Very much so, Stu.
But look, James Wan is doing all the right things.
Oh, he's a good director.
As far as I can tell, he's doing everything so well, so professionally, that he's handling this the best out of anyone.
Now, Stu, have you ever read Astro City? Because there's now a TV, Kurt Busiek's Astro City TV series is now in the works from the American Gods producer.
I haven't read any Astro City.
It is very highly regarded. I've not read it either.
I'm excited to see it if it's coming from the same people who did American Gods.
Basically, like Kurt Busiek taking all the sort of like superhero archetypes and all the talent that he's got. He had a famous run on Thunderbolts, etc., and Avengers.
Okay. That's cool.
And then he went and did this. Everyone I've ever known who's read it, very highly rated.
Nice.
I've never read it myself, but it would be interesting to see as a TV show. Now, Stu, are you excited for my next news item? Because I know I am. Gina Rodriguez is to play Carmen Santiago in Where in the World is Carmen Santiago?
I read this news article.
Yeah. Are you feeling it?
And I intentionally didn't put it in the news.
I wanted, because you're younger than me, and I remember the TV show. And it was also a computer game when I was growing up.
It was a computer game when I was growing up more than a TV show. Like, the game hung around.
Yeah, yeah.
There was
an animated show, though, as well.
I'm reasonably sure I played this at school.
Did you find her? She's often in Rio de Janeiro, I believe.
I don't think I ever got that far into it. When I was at school, I'm talking like when I was like 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They would take us down to the computer room, which was the only room in the school that had computers.
Yeah.
And we'd get like an hour to play.
Come back to the 80s when I was at school, Stu. They still had the computer room then. It was even more shit, I can imagine.
Oh, this was shit. Like, we had the old massive floppy disk that we had to put in the computers. Like, they weren't running high tech. So we went down there and we could actually play Carmen Santiago as one of the games.
It wasn't bad. No, I was
6 or 7. So I'd play it for an hour, leave, and then I'd come back and I'd play the same hour again the next week. And I'd be happy as hell.
Yeah. I've got a bit of a soft spot for this. And I also think it's great casting, having a Latino in the role. This is a really popular franchise. Apparently, it's going to be a live-action movie show on Netflix. It wouldn't surprise me. There may be some sort of animated show as well. There was quite a good animated TV show of this that I used to watch as well. I just think it's a cool property. I mean, in the days, you know, now where we were talking about last week, remember we said it doesn't really matter if there's heat on a franchise. All Hollywood wants is the franchise, and they'll heat it up themselves, you know?
Yeah, this is playing on that trend at the moment, which is looking at the nostalgia factor for people in their, I'd say, early 20s at the youngest through to late 40s.
Yeah, definitely.
It's the biggest kind of category for Netflix users.
Yep. Will you watch this? I will.
Look, it's probably not something that I'm going to watch regardless.
I mean, the original TV show.
If this starts getting great
cheesy, remember she wore the trench coats and all that. Like, it was...
I vaguely remember she used to wear a giant red hat.
Yes, yes,
and a coat, and would like just jump off a building as soon as anyone got close to her, and fly off on like a wingsuit or something.
Yeah, she was tricky to catch.
She was a slippery
sucker. All these clothes and shit. Like, you know, like you needed the fucking degree to work it out. But
I feel like a lot of this is, if it starts getting great reviews, then I'll go and check it out. But
okay.
I'm not super excited.
I'll give you my review when it comes out, Stu.
I didn't get into it originally, so I don't have that nostalgia factor.
Yeah, look, I was around it. I just sort of dug it. Full disclosure, I was pretty stoned when I watched a lot of the animated.
Really, Dad? Yeah. This is brand new information.
No, I'm just saying it was during that period, and I found it pretty entertaining. I also think it's good casting, because people are often saying, Stu, that casting different colours and stuff to have a Latino lead, you know, in a major movie, is, you know, kind of Hispanic lead, is good as well. You know, in terms of diversity and all that kind of stuff. Now, Stu, I've got a comment here, and I must admit I haven't done a great job on the news. And I've just written Classic Justice League HQ is coming back. Now,
yeah, what do you mean by this?
Okay, I can explain what I mean.
This is Dave putting something cryptic in there, so I can't do any research and come in with an informed opinion. Okay, this is This is a sneaky attempt by Dave to make me look foolish. Yes.
Well, okay, I grew up in the era of the Super Friends, Stu, where they had the classic Hall of Justice. You know, meanwhile, the Hall of Justice. I don't know if you ever saw that. Yeah. Okay. Now, if you read the most recent issue of Metal, at the end, Bruce Wayne was teasing the return of the Hall of Justice. And also, there's going to be a new Justice League animated series, Stu, and movie that's going to feature the old school Justice League that's coming out, I believe, in June or July. So basically, DC are moving back to the old classic Hall of Justice, and which I fucking love. Because how many times have I said to you, Stu, that I want to see the Hall of Justice in the Justice League movies? And Stu, like, you know, called me cheesy, words like that, you know, railed against it. Well, it turns out, Stu, they're putting in the animated shows. And if you recall at the end of Justice League, the movie, I believe, they were sort of setting up the forerunner to Hall of Justice because he was saying he was going to turn, I think, Wayne Manor into it. Now...
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, and they've sort of spun off from that. So, and in synchronicity, as I said, they've all, in the most recent Metal, which we'll review later this show, at the end of it, Bruce Wayne was teasing the return of the Hall of Justice 2 and his plans. So, it's coming back in a big way. How excited are you, Stu? Do you think they'll have the voting system that was always I'm a big fan of, and someone has to take the minutes? Let's bring it back to the guys sitting around, the guys and girls sitting around the table and having, like, Adam on Superman's shoulder. And let's bring back a bit of fun, man. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know how fun fits in with this concept. This feels like the most boring administrative task that comic books has ever had.
Are you talking about the meetings?
Yeah, like, let's take a roll call.
Let's
get a secretary going, minutes from last meeting. Apologies for those that can't be here. This is feeling
and
very...
voting on the new members.
Very admin, very corporate.
And there was like a... It always appealed to
me. None of these things go with fun in my...
It always appealed to me. Because you would have then people would nominate, like, okay, Superman wants to get Green Arrow in, we've got to take a vote on it, Batman's vetoing, you know, that kind of stuff. There was rules and regulations behind the whole thing. I enjoyed it as a kid. Gave me some security. I liked that there was an organisation behind it all. They weren't just like flying off willy-nilly. It was
like the only kid that's like, yay, admin and paperwork.
Well, I mean, but I just like it's coming back because it fits him just nicely.
I mean, do you want these guys to declare their taxes at the same time? Is this a...
Well, there was a... reminds me of a funny thing when Spider-Man joined the Avengers and he was so excited because it was paid. And he was really excited, but then he realized...
Yeah, because he was, struggling financially.
Yeah, but you had to disclose your identity for tax reasons, and he couldn't disclose his identity, so he couldn't get paid. I thought it was really funny. Now, Stu, we've got some details on the Solo movie. Lord and Miller to be executive producers on Solo. This just goes to show that, you know, they're giving them, a little payoff and a little title on the movie. Ron Howard will be credited as director. Stu, I'm thinking this is both face-saving and showing Ron Howard's done a huge amount of reshoots. Some reports speculating up to 90% of the whole movie.
So when you put this in the show notes, I kind of did a bit of research on it.
It's more than I did.
There was an anonymous source who was an actor on the movie.
Not David Finn?
Not D. Finn. No. We don't know who they played. We don't know any details, male, female.
I'm
going
to say the chick who plays Daenerys. I think it might be coming
from
who
knows? Her. Could be. I feel like it's probably more likely an extra or someone at that level.
Someone with nothing.
Trying to make a bit of extra cash.
Yeah, true.
But they gave a report to The Vulture. Okay. And they said that Lord and Miller were described as out of control and unable to handle the cast and the pressure.
Wow.
And the assistant director often had to step in and help them.
Really?
They'd go through 25 takes of a scene, and at that point, they just kind of looked confused and bewildered.
That's hilarious, isn't it?
Which I thought was funny.
That's just funny. We're so confused. Which one of these is the right one?
Yeah. Have we even got a good take after 25?
Jesus Christ.
So you can understand why the actors are kind of run down.
Yeah.
They've also said that Lucasfilm wanted something very specific in copying someone else. And Alden, talking about Solo...
Yeah, what they're trying to do Harrison for.
Alden's not a bad actor, but he's not good enough.
Yeah. Tricky role as well.
It is tough. Yeah. When you've got to mimic somebody that's already done
so
it...
So iconic.
It is a little harder.
And Harrison Ford...
You can't put your own spin on that. You can't...
You best to go with dry. Harrison, a lot of the time, if you study Harrison Ford, I mean, he's dry and funny. Just go shoot in that general direction.
Yeah.
You know, like that's.
But like
that's,
he's got to be aware of the accent, the dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when it's your own character, little things like that. If it's different from the source material,
sure.
People are willing to let that go. If you put a little bit of an accent on something, people are like, "Well, it's not in the comics, but I'm okay with it." Like
but he's going up against something that everyone
kind of like
knows.
Wonder Woman's accent.
Yes, the Israeli accent.
The Israeli accent. Mm. They kind of modified the rest of Themyscira. And all those women to have the same accent as Gal Gadot. And sure. they all said to them, because Gal Gadot put the accent on, yeah. We want all of you to have that same accent.
Yep.
And everyone was okay with it, because Gal started it and she's the star. He's going to have to copy Han's dialogue.
Yeah. Supposedly his performance improved once an acting coach was hired.
Yeah. It's pretty hilarious. They hire an acting coach and he gets better.
I have heard of this before. It's not the first time.
Yeah, that's not an uncommon thing. They often get dialect coaches and acting coaches.
I'd need one. If they were going to cast me tomorrow, I'd need an acting coach. Because I'd go too cheesy.
Of course you
would. My instincts would go too cheesy.
Yeah. Way too cheesy.
And also, I'm not going to do 25 takes. I don't have 25 in me. Sinatra's just...
Dave's like the diva. It's like, what? Two takes? That's me. That's
Sinatra
me done.
Sinatra used to get a script, rip out pages and go, there you go, to the director. He'd go, we don't need all these pages. He was Sinatra. He didn't do 25 takes. Can you imagine trying to get 25 takes out of Sinatra?
I can't imagine getting two takes out of
kill you, you know, like...
He's like, one take, I was perfect.
Dean Martin used to have a thing he called spurt acting, where he didn't need to know anything other than, what am I playing? A doctor, got it. And just do it, one take. Was that all about it? What am I playing? Airline pilot? No problems.
Yeah.
He just mentally visualised it and just went. Very quick.
That must be why he's got so many Oscars and
accolades. Dean Martin, well, he had a lot of movies, a lot of hits.
He had a lot of movies, but I think that was just he was popular, not necessarily he was good.
Everybody loves... Oh, excuse me. Everybody loves somebody. Dean Martin was he had a genuine light touch.
They were talents. I don't know whether they were acting talents.
Well, I will say it's Sinatra's defense, because Dean Martin never took acting seriously.
Yeah.
He loved westerns, so westerns he would put more into, like Rio Bravo, example. Yeah. Sinatra, when he wanted to, could really act. Suddenly, Manchurian Candidate, Von Ryan's Express, he's got some movies where
Sinatra was different. He could act.
But Sinatra won an Oscar for Hero Eternity.
Yeah. But, I mean, both of them known more for their singing.
Oh, for sure.
Way more for their musical talents than acting.
Dean Martin, I reckon, he got in via movies with Jerry Lewis. But as he got older, he only wanted to do westerns because he liked westerns. He used to sit around reading his comic books and watching westerns.
Like, when you're that famous and you want to do something, you can just do it.
Yeah, he didn't care at all. So back to Elder Necker, right?
This same report also described Ron Howard as being totally professional, easy to work with the cast and crew.
Sure.
However, the reshoots that they've talked about weren't to add any new scenes.
Yeah, they shot the script.
They stuck with the original Lord and Miller approved and...
Yeah, the Kasdan script. Because apparently Lawrence Kasdan was saying, these guys aren't shooting my movie. They're going on alternate takes of my script. They're going more comedic. And the reports are the script is one of the best Star Wars scripts out there. Lawrence Kasdan, I mean, he wrote Empire Strikes Back, The Big Chill, Grand Canyon, plenty of good movies.
Yeah.
It's apparently a very strong script. So I can understand the old man who's doing one last movie with Han Solo, and his son is a co-writer as well, going, these guys aren't doing my script. You know,
I feel like that's a pretty common thing for script writers. Like, they put so much effort into their work.
Oh, yeah, but he's got a lot of power. Most writers in Hollywood don't have that power.
Yeah. Look, script writers always want to see what they've done exactly as they've written it.
But it never happens.
It never happens. Things like Ragnarok recently, they've said up to 80% of those lines were improvised.
Yeah, but Taika Waititi had a lot of power on the set, whereas Lord and Miller don't have the same power that Kasdan has.
Well, no, but like they took the script, they went, you're meant to say something like this, but riff on that idea.
Yeah.
So they took the essence of what the script had, the essence of what the characters were doing, and they just kind of mixed it up based on what the actors felt was right. Yeah. Lord and Miller, it sounds like, attempted that, and they were attempting to say something like, make it funnier, but do something along these lines.
When you heard they were doing Jim Carrey, Ace Ventura, weren't you troubled?
But they're not experienced enough, they're not good enough directors to be able to get that out of their cast.
No.
They didn't know when to say... No, that's not working. Stick to the script.
I mean, you're not shooting Apocalypse Now in the jungle. You don't need 25 takes and then you're confused. You know, this is Solo. You've got a strong script. Shoot the fucking script.
Yeah, this is two guys that didn't know when to say yes or no to the actors, didn't know how to control it.
Odd. Because I wouldn't describe it as when I look at the cast, they're not giant stars. Like, it's not, you know, a star-heavy cast.
Like
Donald Glover's the biggest star. And I wouldn't
Amelia Clarke from Game of Thrones as well.
She's not a huge movie star.
Not movies, but she is a massive star internationally. Like, because of Game of Thrones, yeah. Because of Terminator.
But Alden Ehrenreich, no one knows who he is.
No one's heard of him, but, I mean, he's the lead in
this
movie.
Who's playing Chewie? Is Chewie the problem? How many takes were they getting out of Chewie?
Well, what I've always wondered is, Chewie's... clearly that sound is done post, right?
I was just wondering the same thing. Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, Peter Matthew did the voice.
I feel like he makes grunts and noises on set, but then they... re-record in post where they can alter it and change it a little bit.
Because famously in Star Wars, he has the last line. In the original New Hope, he has the last... thing at the end. Yeah, I agree. I've often wondered the same thing. Like, is he just making noise and they're just like, just ignore whatever Chewie's doing?
Like, I think it's similar to like a CGI character where they've got some actor that will read the role that they're playing.
Sure.
So the other actors can respond.
But he's dressed in the suit, isn't he?
Yeah, he's physically
properly
in a
Wookiee suit. Yeah.
But I've just always felt like that sound is too clear a warble
for
them
to
pick it up on the set.
No, it's perfect, isn't it? It's it would make no sense. But he does do a lot of gesturing and stuff, Chewie. I love Chewie.
Oh, like there is someone on set acting and probably making some noise, but it's similar to what you're making.
Because Peter
Matthew's
now retired from playing because he's too crippled and stuff.
Well, yeah, he walks with a cane.
Yeah, he did a lot of good service. How bad were the Wookiees in that one of the prequels when they went to the Wookiee planet? It was like, man, the Wookiees the Wookiees rule normally, and this one, they're just terrible. When I was a kid, I read some of the Han Solo prequels, Stu, and they have some good stuff with Chewie in there. I've actually bought recently on Kindle, there's a series of novels like Rebel Dawn. It's all these kind of like classic, like Han Solo before he meets, you know, in New Hope. And I'm going to read some of them as well. Han Solo is one of my favourite characters, man, and Chewie as well. So I hope it comes out well. What are you thinking, Stu? Are you optimistic on the quality of the movie? Forget about box office. Are you optimistic about the quality of the finished product for Solo?
I'm half-half. Yeah. Look, there's no doubt Ron Howard is amazing at what he does, and he is capable of producing an incredible movie.
Sure.
I think the script as well is of a good quality.
You worry about the acting?
I'm a little worried about what I've heard from Alden. Yeah. I think he's okay at best.
Yep.
The reshoots never bode well. Because ultimately there will be some Lord and Miller scenes that make it in. Like
you wonder, don't you?
I mean, reports have kind of blown up and said that it's up to a 90% reshoot rate, which I doubt is that high.
Well, that's almost, he's done the whole movie again.
Effectively. But, I mean, even at best, that still means 10% of this is going to be
Lord. That would make some sort of sense, though. If you think about Ron Howard, extremely professional, always gets the product out there, that would explain why we're not seeing a ton. He really is reshooting it all. And then he's in post after that. Like, maybe he did reshoot the whole thing. Maybe they've gone, scrap this. They've got the money. They can go, scrap
Money's not the problem. It's the time that's the problem.
Yeah.
He hasn't had the full production run. They're literally limited in hours of daylight that they've got.
Yeah.
Will
I see my documentary on how it flies in on the chopper with his cap on? And he's just like, I'm getting too old for this shit. as the chopper descends, maybe Chewie's there in the medium, in the actual suit.
Yeah.
I'm amusing myself, Stu.
You're also dying slightly over there.
Slowly dying, Stu, but slowly. So I think I'll still see all these movies.
Nice.
Now, Stu, Spider-Man is promoted to an Avenger by Tony Stark in a TV spot for Avengers Infinity War. I haven't actually watched this, but apparently there's a TV spot out there where...
Yeah, it's quite funny. Tony Stark, like, knights him with his hand.
That's cool.
Like, taps on the shoulders, you're an Avenger now.
Do you see down the line, Stu, new Avengers with Wolverine, Spider-Man and all that kind of gang? Can you see that from these Marvel movies?
I can't see a movie called New Avengers. I can't see happening.
Okay.
I feel like that's too comic booky at the moment.
But maybe that would be it. Like,
I can see that concept happening.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's not going to be called New Avengers. It's going to be called something else.
Sure.
But sure, the concept is possible, assuming X-Men and Fox work the thing out.
Yeah, assuming they Fox and it all
strips, yeah, assuming they get a Wolverine.
I heard of some reports about the Wolverine. You know how people are saying Scott Eastwood? And
yeah, I said Scott Eastwood.
Yeah,
I am some of those people.
Yeah, okay, but apparently he's in a new movie, Stu, and the reviews on him are terrible. I've not seen a lot of Scott Eastwood, other than he's in Suicide Squad playing somebody. But
he's one of the soldiers.
Yeah, he's in a new movie coming out this week. I'm not sure which one it is. But
Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim, yeah. And the reviews are that he's woefully bad.
Like, he's been in a ton of movies, and he's always been okay, but never brilliant.
I mean,
put it this way, he's not living up to his dad.
A bit hard, though.
Like, it's tough.
An institution.
It is tough when you've got a dad like that and you want to go into the same
industry. Like, it's like, oh, great, Dad, you not only have to be one of the greatest actors ever, you're one of the great directors as well.
Like, could you imagine, like, Meryl Streep's daughter trying to become an actor?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's
like,
similar.
That's tough, you know?
Clint Eastwood is so iconic. You know,
he is, and even after he stopped acting,
he's directing movies.
He's now directing Oscar-worthy movies.
He's like Unforgiven and all sorts of movies.
Was it El Torino?
Yeah, Gran Torino.
Gran Torino. That is such a good movie.
Oh, yeah. Flags of Our Fathers. He's got lots of good movies.
And he did Sniper recently, didn't he? Where he directed that? Which American Sniper? Was that him?
I didn't know he directed American Sniper. Did he really? Yeah, I think he did.
I think it was him.
Okay. All right. Is that the... Yes, it is. I love that movie.
Yeah, that was a really good movie.
Have you seen a movie, Stu? I don't think he directed it. It's called In the Line of Fire from the 90s. It's pretty good.
I know of it, but I can't remember.
He plays... He's old. Like, it's Clint Eastwood. He's like... You know, he's always old, but he's like in his 70s.
Yeah, 60s, 70s.
And he was one of the bodyguards when Kennedy got shot. And he's basically ever since been affected by it because the shooter got the president.
Yeah,
it's a really good movie. John Malkovich plays the baddie, I believe, from my distant memory. It's actually if you want a good Clint Eastwood movie,
John Malkovich has always seemed like an underrated actor to me.
Oh, yeah, he's a good actor.
Like he's just that little bit unhinged, and he doesn't get taken seriously.
If you want a good John Malkovich movie where he plays the heel, like this is a good one. In the Line of Fire, it's a good like 90s Clint Eastwood movie. Now, Stu. The Titans television show, coming to DC streaming service later this year, is really going all out with its ties to the larger Batman universe. It's been revealed that Tony Zucco will appear in the series, which features Dick Grayson as Robin gathering together a team of superpowered individuals to fight villains that range from Trigon to Ra's al Ghul. Oh, I reckon that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's very cool. I feel like it's unlikely to get a Ra's al Ghul. A villain of that size, you'd think they'd save for the main...
They might have Talia, though.
Batman universe. Talia, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like putting the Joker in a series that's going to be on Netflix.
Well, what about Gotham? Like they're always teasing that. I don't watch it now, but...
Will Gotham have the Jerome character?
Yeah, I know. But they tease him to bring the ratings up and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Look, when you're going for the adult, full-blown Ra's al Ghul and Joker and these sort of characters, you save them for the movies. They're the A-list villains.
Will you watch...
It's like you never put Thanos in a Netflix show.
Will you watch Titans when it comes out, if you can get your hands on it? I'm not going to pay for the streaming service.
I'm not going to pay for streaming service. Sure, maybe if
it falls
into
your lap, Burst, would you watch it?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? I mean, the images of Robin look fantastic. The images. Remember the costume?
Yeah, it was
beautiful.
Like,
it was right on point.
It was brightly coloured, but it was like a militaristic functional uniform.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Danny Garcia, manager of both Henry Cavill and The Rock, teased something exciting on Twitter the other day. Who is this man? What are we saying? What are we planning? Oh, it's good. You'll thank me later. She captioned a photo of her and Cavill on a set, which looked like Shazam. You know, pointing to that Superman appearance in Shazam, which has been rumoured.
Is that really exciting?
Well, she's saying it. She's the
actor. Yeah, like this tweet doesn't...
The picture was of Henry Cavill in a cape. So, like, you know, a silhouette of Henry Cavill in a cape with the cowlick thing on his, you know, sort of doing the full spit curl. I mean, you're looking about as excited for Shazam as I am, which is just like, wow...
Exactly. You know, he's just another person.
I'm more excited for the Titans.
He's just another person that's going to make Zachary Levi look like a toddler in a suit.
Yeah. Some people, you know,
Henry Cavill is built.
Yeah, I know.
He's about 6'4", 6'5".
Powerful looking guy.
To be fair, Zachary Levi is 6'4", 6'5". Like, he's tall.
He's tall.
They are of the same height.
He just doesn't have mass, though.
But he's not built. Henry Cavill is going to, like, outshadow him drastically.
But he's in that muscle suit, which I think looks ridiculous, though.
Yeah.
Like if I wore a huge muscle suit and I was like, oh, Dave, you're so tough. Yeah, it's a suit. It's a padded.
Yeah, the giant padded suit with, like, the tiny, like, neck that comes out of the top. And I mean, he's going to have, like, these tiny little wrists and ankles that pop out of the suit at the end. It's going to be ridiculous.
I get the feeling like Henry Cavill, if they got into a fight, would destroy him.
I mean, I feel like you don't... This for me is a dumb move.
Mm.
If you want to make Zachary Levi look massive,
yeah,
you put him against Tom Cruise-sized villains. You pick people that are 5'5".
Mini-me.
You pick, like, Danny DeVito's of the world, and you get him to
come back as Penguin.
Yeah, you get him to go up against, like, these 5'0".
But he's tall villains. Himself. It's not like he's a miniature himself. That would make more sense if he was a short guy. He's fairly tall.
But if you put him against other tall people, he's not going to look big. You want him to look massive, don't you?
Yeah, I get it. But I think what they're pointing to is that as a kid, he idolizes Superman, so that could be the scene. So for me,
I would rather him, as a kid, look up in the sky and see a CGI little Superman, like, streak through the sky.
Yeah.
He's like, and then little things like that where you know it's the same universe, but you never get a scene with the two of them together.
Maybe I'm just getting old and crotchety, but I'm just not even excited at all by all this shit. Like, it's just like Shazam. Like, man, I used to like Shazam many years ago, but, like, I can't get excited. Like, I'm excited for the Titans TV show we just discussed, all sorts of these movies, but Shazam is just not hitting my sweet spot at all. Like, hearing that, like, even what you said then, yeah, sounds cool, but I'm not like, God, I've got to rush to the cinema, you know?
No, at the moment, I'm not excited to see DC movies in general. Like,
I'm more excited than you for Aquaman, but I'm not excited for Shazam. But you know, we've got some fans who are like Corey and that are really feeling the Shazam movie. They're really kind of like on the Facebook page saying they're looking forward.
Who knows? Like, it could just blow expectations out of the water. We don't know. Like,
I've on the record,
it's infinitely possible.
Yeah.
That DC could make an amazing movie at any time.
Sure, of course.
They have the characters. They've got the money to get the cast.
Yeah.
They've got the money to get the directors.
They've got all the advantages kind of thing. They've got no...
They've got all the opportunities to make a good movie, but they haven't been making them.
No.
And it's largely due to the tone.
Are you going on record though, Stu? Because I'm going on record as saying I think Shazam will flop. And I do mean flop. I think as in bomb.
I think it will be profitable if you want to go down that road.
Yeah.
It will make money.
Make money. So I'm saying it could be a bomb.
It will bomb critically, I think.
Yeah.
And it won't make anywhere near the level of money they want it to make.
Sure.
It will make a profit. I think that's... It's almost a given for any
comic. I think it's got its built-in order. But Green Lantern didn't. Green Lantern bombed.
Yeah, but it made back its production, didn't it?
I don't know, actually.
I think technically it was...
Okay.
Profit. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, no, good point. Good point.
I'd look it up on Box Office Mojo, but
I'm looking at it right now. But yeah, no, I hear your point though. You make a good point. You're saying there's enough of a built-in audience.
Pretty much superhero movies at the moment,
yeah.
Minimum are making like $500 million.
Yeah,
I can't think of a comic book movie that's made less than $500 million, and their production and marketing and everything adds up to maybe.
But you look at a movie like what was it, John Carter? You know, of Mars, that made nothing.
Yeah, but that's not really associated with the comic book franchises.
No, it's based on a mega old property by Edgar Rice Burroughs. Okay, so production budget was $200 million. It only made $219 million worldwide, $116 million in the States, and $103 million foreign. So it really, really disappointed.
So if you take into, like, that's not including
marketing, it made a lot.
Marketing, then, yeah, it made a lot.
It was a real flop. Obviously, that was a disaster for the studio and put their plans back years.
Absolutely. It actually scrapped a universe that would have been better off.
Yeah.
Like, if that movie had succeeded and they changed up a bunch of, like, the CGI suit and all that sort of stupid things.
Yeah.
That would have been a better universe to build off of.
Oh, than what they've got, for sure.
It's interesting, in one of the YouTube videos that I mentioned before with Movies with Mikey, he looks at the scale, which is super important. Every superhero film in Marvel, the solo superhero films, they've tackled really small-scale villains on a local level.
Yeah.
Because it makes that story relatable. You can feel for those characters. You get some sense of empathy.
Yeah.
Like, even Thor, which was a massive space opera kind of thing, his first struggle is just a fish out of water story, and he's saving a town.
Yeah, it's true. A robot. It's true. It's a town in Mexico somewhere.
Like, it's such a small story that you can go, I understand this struggle. I can relate to this. They don't throw him up against cosmic beings and Thanos instantly because you've got no perspective.
The Destroyer is as big as it gets.
Yeah, but DC, right out of the bat, went for alien race going to take over the world unless Henry Cavill can stop him.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
And immediately, you've got no perspective. You lose any kind of empathy for that struggle.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. I think Shazam and DC in general have gone too big too quickly because they're trying to catch up to Marvel.
Oh, they're definitely playing catch up unsuccessfully as well. I always felt, and you know how much I love Dark Knight Returns. It's probably one of, it's in my top five comic books. It's one of the reasons I read comics. But the second Snyder went up there and held that up, and started going on about Batman versus Superman, Dark Knight Returns, and he brought, I mean, Frank Miller, a great on stage. Even I was like, odd place to start.
Yeah,
like, you know, like, and I'm a fan of the comic big time.
It's amazing source material.
But I'm like, odd place to begin, because that's an end.
It's a terrible place to begin, and introducing a new Batman and Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
it's a weird place to start.
Now, and I remember a lot of casuals, and I mean true casuals who never read comics.
Yeah,
only see a tiny fraction of these movies on TV and stuff. They were saying, "Why Batman and Superman fighting?" And I kept saying, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, but on this version they haven't met before, so they've got to sort of sort out their differences. Yeah. And that sounds so fucking lame, but that's literally what it is.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah.
You know, even in Dark Knight Returns, the Frank Miller comic, they had entrenched friendship, which they were forced then to fight because, you know, they had different goals. But they had years of friendship before that because their comics, they were like 50 and 60, you know, in terms of age.
Yeah, similar to like a Marvel Civil War.
Yeah, so like they had all this built-in history, which Frank Miller knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came to a fight, there was even before the fight, there was Superman going, you realise if you cross this line...
Yeah, there was this tension building up the whole way through, and you knew something was going down.
Yeah.
Whereas in this movie, it comes out of the blue.
This movie, they meet on the street, they start fighting, basically.
And then it's solved by one of them yelling at Martha. Yeah.
It's flawed in its concept, isn't it?
It is. DC's constantly done this. It's gone too big too quickly to try to catch up. They've gone with the most iconic stories and the biggest comic books.
So they didn't have faith in their own process. They didn't have faith in their own characters.
I think they kind of assumed that you watch Marvel, and by that stage, Marvel had done the Avengers.
Yeah.
So they'd done a world-ending event.
Sure.
And they went, audiences reacted well.
Yeah.
Audiences are okay with a world-ending event. What they didn't count on was audiences were okay because we'd had movies with, you know, four characters.
Bang, 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 yeah.
Where we understood the characters, we got backstories, we saw them struggle at a personal level with, like, their own demons.
Yes.
Like, we'd seen Cap wake up in a new world after losing his...
That's right, the
loved
end of,
ones.
The end of First Avenger.
We saw Tony kind of struggle with his own demons with post-traumatic stress.
Sure.
We saw Thor struggle... We saw Bruce Banner struggle.
Yeah.
And then we get to Avengers.
There was an investment in each one.
Exactly. You knew these characters. Truth. Like, they only introduced minor characters in the Avengers.
No, agreed. Now, Stu, I've got something here. Robert Downey Jr. shared the full cast list for The Voyage of Dr. Dolittle. So a lot of big names are on the cast. One of my favourite comedians, Craig Robinson, if you know him from This Is The End.
And Hot Tub Time Machine.
Hot Tub Time Machine. I like that guy a lot. So he was in it. Stu, I mean, Dr. Doodle is not my cup of tea, frankly.
Yeah, neither. I
is this one for the kids, though, Stu? Are the kids, like, at school, like, I mean, I don't know what ages you teach, but Dr. Doodle to me is almost like preschooler or middle school.
I'm remembering the last Dr. Doolittle was the Eddie Murphy one.
Eddie Murphy had, I think, two movies.
He did have two, but the second one was a flop.
Sure.
The first one I saw as a kid.
Yeah.
It is that kind of...
Talks to the animals, isn't it?
Yeah, can understand and talk to animals. It's kind of aimed at that, I would say, like, maybe 7 or 8 year olds up to your teenagers.
Sure.
But, you know, it's a fun, family-friendly...
Yeah. It's something to take the parents take the kids to.
Exactly. It's the kind of a holiday and it's raining, what do we do?
Yeah.
To entertain the kids.
We know these movies, when they do well, like Boss Baby, can make a lot of money. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that this has that big a cast...
Yeah, it was a huge cast.
But that... It always kind of happens with these movies where you've got a lot of voice acting and a lot of CGI.
Yeah.
You can get a lot of massive, big stars to come in and do some voice acting because they can knock out a movie's worth of dialogue in a couple of days.
Yep.
Instead of 6-7 months
to
shoot
cash
it.
And then walk out.
Yeah, it's like Bill Hader, who famously did all the noises for BB-8. In Star Wars.
That's hilarious.
And a bunch of other animals
and
creatures.
That's actually funny, I think, that he did that.
He did the entire of recording for that movie in under an hour.
Yeah, I don't...
He walks into a studio in Vegas and records a bunch of noises from going... Bruh, bruh,
that's so funny.
For an hour, and then he leaves, and they're like, yep, that's done. We now have BB-8.
Bill Hader hits the tables with that sweet Disney money.
I know, right?
just pay me in fucking, you know, tokens.
Yeah.
You know, the chips, the gambling chips. I'm going to take it straight out onto the floor. Stu, I broke some news here. Toys R Us blames bankruptcy on millennials not having kids. This literally was in their financial reports.
I mean, that is, like, you've written here, it's hilarious, and it is.
And I do blame millennials a lot, and I'm sure you do as well, but...
I hate the word and term millennials. I'm considered a millennial if you go by my age.
Yeah.
I've always hated that term.
It's stupid. It's condescending, and it's basically just another version of, I can't stand the youths, you know, the young people.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but to blame, like, it's kind of like, don't blame your own business practices or your own business model. Blame the fact that these millennials aren't having kids, really? Because I know plenty who've had kids.
I just like that statistically there are more kids now than there ever have been on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, so. There are more kids right now than there ever have been. The fact that they're not having kids is ridiculous.
Maybe it's
the fact
just that means that people
don't want to spend money on Lego anymore. People want to buy video games. They want to, you know.
Well, they want to go direct, maybe. Because people do spend money on Lego, but maybe they don't buy it at Toys R Us.
Well, yeah. Amazon. The other thing is things like Amazon and online sales, which is their biggest competitor.
Yeah.
Anything online is always going to normally have fewer overheads, so the prices are down.
Yeah, I mean, I have nostalgia for going as a kid into, I've said before on the show, going into the you know, toy fucking Toys R Us thing and looking around, looking at all the He-Man figures and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I wasn't in there last year or the last 10 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's nostalgic for me, but I certainly aren't in there picking up figures. I've generally bought them either online or even in a comic book store, you know?
Yeah, or at conventions. Stuff like
yes,
that.
At convention. Yeah, good point, Stu.
Like most fans, like adults that go and buy this stuff, they're looking for deals. They're looking for a particular product.
Yes.
So they will go online. They'll go to conventions. They'll go to comic book stores. They're not going to go to a general Toys R Us because they're normally not going to have that specific model that they need.
They're going to have like the crappy sort of like, I don't know.
They're marketed at kids that don't really need that level of quality or that...
Exactly.
Like, they're happy to play with a Batman figure.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're a collector, you need a specific Batman suit.
Exactly.
You normally want to buy vintage as well. Like, you want to get something that's a little older.
Or if it's new, it's expensive. They're the hot toys and all those kind of things that look incredible.
Well, sure. But that's not something that appeals to the mass markets for kids.
It's very niche.
Because parents don't want to come in and spend $100 on a figurine that their kid's going to throw around in a bath or...
I don't blame them at all.
Play in a sandpit and lose one day.
I told you my mum never got me that Battle Cat, and I begged for that cat. I wanted that Battle Cat so bad.
It's your white whale, isn't it?
It is a bit, yeah. And
Dave Life revolves around a Battle Cat.
But, like, hilariously, I was not close to getting a Stu.
Yeah.
Like, and I was a spoiled child, you know what I mean? Like, I remember my... so, I'm not crying... It's not crying me a river for Dave, because I remember a Christmas where I was embarrassed by just how awesome the Transformer I got was. I got Jetfire. Who was basically like a Robotech Transformer.
Yep.
He was directly stolen from Robotech. And he's only barely in the Transformer cartoons. And I got it, Stu. And my mouth just must have opened up wide. And I was just going, this is amazing. And I was almost like embarrassed because it was so far above the other Transformers that I had.
So much white guilt. I love it.
You know, but I wasn't that embarrassed. I then quickly bragged about it. Quickly turned that embarrassment into...
But that's something, again, like Transformers, they cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
I had a friend that bought himself a Transformer like 5 years ago, maybe.
Mm.
And like, this dude's got advanced degrees in science and like he's a smart dude.
Yeah.
It took him 20 minutes to transform this thing, knowing how to do it. Like, he'd done it back forth 50 times already.
Wow. So they're hard.
And it was like this giant monster of a toy, and it would take him like 20 minutes to transform everything and get him...
That's too long for me.
And I'm like, dude, that's intense. And he's like, yeah, but it's so awesome.
Hey, look, I mean, yeah, you go into some stores. When we were down in Adelaide a few months ago, we walked into a store, and it was you know, a novelty sort of like geek-related store down in Adelaide in the middle of the city.
Sure.
And they had some great stuff there. They had a lot of the, you know, they re-released the Transformers, like the Generation 1 waves or whatever. They had so much stuff in there. They had Jabba's Palace, and I actually remember I said to
Michelle,
awesome. I said, do I need this? And she's like, no. And I had it in my hand, like, the box in my hands. And actually, the Wonder Woman up there, the Frank Cho Wonder Woman, I didn't get it there. I saw it there. And the guy wanted to charge me $60 more than King's, and I'm like, I'll get it at King's. Like,
why wouldn't you?
Yeah. But no, sometimes you'll see, I am attracted to the sort of as I got older, the bigger sort of kind of more fancy looking one with a bit more detail on it.
Well, I mean, the demographic changes. Like when you're a kid, you want to play with it.
Yeah.
You want it to be something that you can move around and articulate and you can have battle your other toys.
Exactly. Star Wars versus Transformers, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Sure. Like you can muck around in the bath with action figures and stuff as a little kid. As an adult, you kind of want a display piece.
You get a lot more mature and want to put it up on a shelf, yeah.
You want to put it on a shelf, you want to show it off.
One day I'll come in, you'll come in here to do the show and I'll have a battle cat like life size for you. It'll be the
life-size battle cat.
An actual battle cat. Might get weight and put a saddle on him.
Dave just buys a lion illegally off some African
site. The one I'll get, just to wrap up this section of the show, will be, I'll get a full detailed one with probably He-Man on it as well. You know what I mean? Like, it won't be... The one I really want is actually the actual toy version, where now there's sort of more statues.
Yeah.
And I've seen the one I want, and it's been at Supernova for many years, and the guy prices it too highly. He wants like $250 for it. And I'm very cheap.
Because I feel like you're the only person that comes up to him every con. You're like, is it less now? Is it less now?
I'm just like staring at it. And he got me with Cable, because I did that for about 2 years with Cable. Eventually, I bought it. Yeah. But Battle Cat, I almost got it like the last time I was at Supernova. And the guy's almost going out of business, and the look on my face is pure greed.
I feel like he's just been trolling you for years.
Feels like him.
Like he sees you coming, and he slaps the $250 price tag.
He's like, oh,
over the $150 sticker that's already on there.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, yeah, come on, Davey, come on.
Come on, kid.
Yeah, I see you drooling over there.
You want this, sir?
Yeah.
And it's like in the original packaging and everything. I mean, it really is something. But anyway, Stu, did you see this? Is this a joke? DC Comics are designing Swamp Thing to look like Alan Moore. actually, it does look a bit like Alan Moore.
I mean, I feel like Alan Moore is just trying to look more and more like Swamp Thing. I feel like that's the way it's happening.
Well, he's just crazy with a big beard, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got shaggy hairdo, he's got a big beard. Look, they've designed Swamp Thing with less, like, moss and swamp stuff all over him other than like a beard and hair.
I've always found Swamp Thing, this is going to sound like sacrilege, one of the most dullest fucking characters in DC.
I've never had a huge love for Swamp Thing.
I know Alan Moore's Swamp Thing is legendary. I've never read it.
Look, this is just another shot between DC and Alan Moore in this ongoing pity war they've got going on.
Yeah, it's kind of...
I'm not really taking either side in this argument. Like, I know both have been...
Yeah.
Kind of, there's pros and cons on both sides.
Sure.
Both have been mistreated.
He's a bit of a dick, but, you know.
Yeah, he's known as being a complaining dick, but they've also mistreated his character. They have mistreated
and
his character.
They screwed him on Watchmen. They did screw him.
Yeah, but, you know. I mean, at the same time, like, he was under contract and they owned the characters and he was aware of that at the time.
True.
Like, there's...
They screwed him with the
there
deal.
There is validity to both sides of this argument, and both have a right to be upset and angry with the other.
Yeah.
But neither of them are playing ball now.
But also, you could have moved past it by this point.
Neither of them want to move past it. No. They're both hanging on to this vendetta.
Drew Geraci was telling me something pretty awesome, actually, about the swamp thing. There's a thing in it where apparently part of the wood that's in the swamp or something is the crucifix that, or the spear that pierced Christ. And actually wound up in the swamp with Swamp Thing. Like, apparently the run of Swamp Thing that Alan Moore did is really full on.
Yeah.
Because I've said to him, dude, Drew, Swamp Thing when he turns up in the comics like these days, like it's almost like, fuck, can I just like not see it? It's so fucking dull. But he's like, yeah, but the actual run of Alan Moore Swamp Thing is like blowing your mind, you know?
I mean, Alan Moore is such a talented writer.
He's great.
And what he took to when he was in his prime like that, with like Watchmen and Swamp Thing, and like they were incredible runs.
Yeah.
It's a real pity that everything happened, and you know, there's so many relationships that just failed miserably.
And he's definitely gone into grumpy old man mode.
Oh, full on grumpy.
Huge,
old man.
Like just like fuck.
And at this point, neither DC nor Alan are going to make it right.
No, I think they're past.
They're going to hold on to this until. They both collapse.
I think DC have gone, we're going to monetize it or we don't give a fuck. Like,
we're
not bringing
And look,
this
story comes up constantly. Every time The Watchmen comes up, and obviously with like Doomsday at the moment.
Yeah,
Doomsday Clock. It's a current topic that keeps getting brought up.
Yeah.
And like every time an article is written mentioning Alan Moore, the comment section is just filled with pro-DC, anti-Alan Moore, and
the same old arguments.
Just fighting back and forth in every comment section.
I don't have that kind of time. I'm too depressed about the cricket team. I care about things that really matter. I'm with Steve Smith crying in the fucking airport. And I just also feel that, I get a feeling with Alan Moore, he obviously is financially secure because he's made a lot of money off all these movies and stuff. That he's almost trolling a bit. Like, I think, I really don't think I get the feeling like he really doesn't want to work for them again and really feels he has nothing more to lose with it.
I read somewhere that he's not taking any checks from any of this stuff.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah, I think he made some deal with DC a while ago where he said, whatever you're doing with my characters, I don't want any part of it.
Wow.
I want two things. First is that you take my
control
name...
Control of the world.
First is that you take my name off. I don't want to be known as a creator of stuff that you're doing in really? My characters. And second is that my cut gets shared among the other creators.
Oh. So he's taking a principled stance.
Yeah, I think.
Wow. That's something I wouldn't have expected.
And I think, from memory, DC went, sure, we won't pay you, we'll give it to other creators, but we're still leaving your name on it because it sells comics.
True.
I thought that was pretty hilarious.
I know with Miracle Man, where he does have a history of this as well. Like, yeah, Stu, sometimes I think where there's smoke, there's fire. I know with Alan Moore and Miracle Man, which he did with Marvel.
Yep.
I think he did it with Marvel, like UK or whatever. But anyway, he had a very bitter divorce from them as well. And when it came to reprinting it, because it was out of print for literally like 30 years, he is credited as the author rather than Alan Moore on the reprints.
Yeah, it seems like a bit of a common theme here that, look, he doesn't work well with big corporations. I think, regardless of who it is, he doesn't work well with them.
Yeah.
And they don't. Like, they are in it to make money, and I feel like Alan Moore isn't in this game to make the money.
No, he's definitely got more of an... He comes from more of the artistic angle, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And then they've never meshed. Those two ideologies have never meshed.
No, I mean, and the business is a marriage of art and commerce. That's entertainment.
It's trying to be.
And commerce is the overriding partner.
For them, commerce is the overriding partner. For him, it's the artistic side. So they're never going to see eye to eye. Like, he's never going to make peace with these massive companies.
No. I saw. You know, he's got a very bad
at a fundamental level, they just don't agree.
And I think he's a prickly guy.
Yeah.
In general. Like, apparently with Grant Morrison, we came on, he was telling a story on, I think, on the 2000 AD documentary. It was his own documentary, Talking with Gods. And he came on to write, he was going to write Miracle Man, which was kind of was Alan Moore's one of his earliest things. And this was Grant Morrison's big break. And he had sent him a letter, I think, sort of saying, oh, this is such a privilege, such an honor, I love your work, you know, yada, yada, yada. Here are some ideas I'm going to do. I hope you appreciate, you know, that I really feel like I'm in your shadow, that kind of thing. Very young Grant Morrison. He said Alan Moore rang him up and just gave it to him with both barrels, like, he was like nuts. You know, so there's two sides to every story.
Absolutely. Look, nothing's going to change.
No. Like, he ain't changing at this point.
Yeah, and when you look at, like, internet commenters and that sort of forums, and if you are passionate enough to pick a side, fine, good on you. You've clearly got ideologies and moral, like, fine.
Sure.
But you're not going to convince the other side to change.
And you're not going to get a major corporate to change their ways either.
No. You know. And if you haven't picked a side, you don't care enough about it to pick a side, so they're not going to convince you.
You're arguing about ancient history. You know what I mean?
Like, these fights aren't going to get you anywhere.
You, I don't you could understand. Be sitting in the fucking breakup of the Beatles.
They basically need to just sit down and go, agree to disagree, let's not talk.
Did I ever tell you this? When the Beatles broke... Well, not when the Beatles broke up, but when I got into the Beatles, I remember asking my mother, why did the Beatles break up? I still remember, and she goes... I don't know, I think it was money. And I was like, but why? Like, that naive, like, kid, you know, but why would it happen? As you get older, you can understand that people just grow apart and it becomes harder, you know?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's grown up with their own sets of beliefs and morals and...
I haven't really. Lack of.
A lack of is definitely a version. Yeah, sure.
Can you imagine me refusing the money? Because I can't. That's an alternate reality that I just can't even envision. We went through 600 realities and David never refused the money. Anyway, Stu, the Ready Player One screenwriter has been tapped to adapt Rom the Space Knight. Now, are you familiar at all with Rom the Space Knight, Stu?
No, this is a character that's completely missed me.
Now, I will say this. I'm not really, other than hearing reports of Rom the Space Knight movie at Hasbro moving forward for the last couple of years. But basically, it's a toy line from the late 70s to early 80s. I don't know how successful it was, but it was a toy line that came out right in the Star Wars fever, etc.
Sure.
But what happened was Marvel licensed it, or they licensed it to Marvel, and there was a 75-issue run in the early 80s to mid-80s that's highly acclaimed. It had Bill Mantlo, the Rocket Raccoon creator,
yep,
and many other things.
Okay.
A writer on Howard the Duck. He wrote it, had Bill Sienkiewicz on art, nice. Had Mort Simonson, had a lot of top-tier that's Marvel
some big names.
Yeah, and apparently it was really good. And I heard it being described in Collider from people who read it at the time, like John Schnepp, Robert Meyer Burnett, were saying it was basically like Aliens meets Star Wars. And apparently okay. It was awesome. They were all saying glowing. You know, when you get a whole panel just going, this was great stuff. And it was based on some crappy toy line. Now, none of this is to say that Hasbro will have the answers. And, you know, maybe...
I mean, Hasbro has teased a shared universe kind of concept before.
Yes, and this is part of that.
I mean, they still haven't gotten anything off the ground in terms of that shared universe.
They're fucking Transformers, like, movies.
Yeah, I don't know how successful... And at the moment, Ready Player One is mixed at best.
Sure.
Have you
seen it? Is it out yet here? I want to see it.
I think it is out.
I want to see it, actually, to be honest. Just out of curiosity.
I have the book. I haven't read it.
I own it on Kindle, but I'm not reading it. Fuck that. I'll watch the movie.
Like, I've heard a lot of people that have read the book that said the book is incredible.
Okay.
So the book is worth reading, apparently.
I almost feel like I want to hire someone to read it for me and tell me what it's like.
For me, this is one of those movies that if it gets massively positive reviews, I'll go and see it.
Yeah.
But unless it gets that kind of buzz,
yeah,
it's a wait until you can stream it.
I really want more the actual thing. The Oasis kind of like virtual reality than the actual world. Movie. Yeah, I'm more interested in like being able to go into that and just...
Of course you are, yeah.
I want to spend some time on the cricket team. Maybe sort them out. Open up the batting. Can I give you more skills? Because I need them. I'm going to be facing some fast-pitch bowling. I don't know, man. The idea of Ready Player One sounds good. But anyway, the thing is, Stu, alongside the shared universe, you've got G.I. Joe. Now, they could do a much better version of G.I. Joe than they've done in any of the movies so far. Because the G.I. Joe...
They could, and good. I think G.I. Joe could make a good universe.
Oh, hell
and yeah. Transformers could make a good universe.
Yeah.
I don't know if their mixing would make a good universe.
There are Transformers versus G.I. Joe comics. I know that.
Yeah, it feels a little wacky for me. I don't...
Well, it feels to me like the G.I. Joes have become too much of just the grunts and not the stars then. Because, you know,
I mean, how do you compete with, like, an Optimus Prime? Like, no G.I. Joe is going to be up to that level.
It feels more like a one-off meeting than a sort of regular kind of thing.
Yeah.
I could see a single
crossover.
Do you know Mask? This is an 80s TV show. You've probably never heard of it.
I've heard of The Mask.
Mask was a 80s cartoon that, honestly, if you look on YouTube, had one of the best like title sequences. That's all I remember. It had an awesome song. It was awesome. That's also... Hasbro own a lot of property. I mean, don't Hasbro own He-Man? Do they still own He-Man? It was certainly a Hasbro product.
I don't know who currently owns He-Man.
Yeah, I don't know who owns a He-Man now, but, I mean, there's always talk about getting a He-Man movie off the ground. I'd be down for that. But I'm going to sound like an old man here, but if they did He-Man, I'd want it to sort of skewed to the classic. You know, like go fantasy with a little bit of sci-fi mixed in. Like the original He-Man cartoon fucking rocked, dude. You know, like rocked fucking hard. Now, something else that I think is going to rock really hard, John Cena is set to play Duke Nukem.
I love this casting news.
Me too.
John Cena is the perfect physical specimen to play Duke Nukem.
Definitely.
I think John Cena can absolutely act the shit out of Duke Nukem.
Definitely.
He's got that humor down. You could play it a little bit silly.
This could be his big, big, big hit. Big, huge
this
hit.
This could be a massive hit for him as a solo artist.
Yeah.
Previously, he's kind of worked in ensemble casts. He's worked well with others.
He impressed me in that movie. Was it Amy Poehler? He was in a movie with Amy Poehler.
Amy Schumer. Yeah, he did Trainwreck.
He was very, very funny in that movie.
He was funny. Yeah. And Amy Schumer's come out in interviews and said, like, she would lose her shit when he was acting because he was hilarious. Yeah.
He seemed extremely... I'm not a wrestling guy. He seemed extremely likable.
Yeah.
He hasn't
quite got the charisma of The Rock.
Yeah, but who does?
Like, The Rock came out of the same environment as a wrestler.
Sure.
And has hit the ground running. Like, he's been a monster success. Yeah. Cena's never going to reach that level.
No, but Duke Nukem looks like it could play into his realm pretty well.
Absolutely.
I'd be down for that, actually.
He feels like an action star used to.
Yes, back in the
80s. Like an 80s Dolph Lundgren.
Like Rambo. like Rambo with the bandolier across.
Yeah, Sly him. Stallone maybe. Yeah, you could run something like that for sure. Like
First Blood Part 2 kind of thing, where Sly was just maxed out, steroided out.
Yeah.
Had the bandolier going crazy in the Vietnam.
But like Cena's got comedy chops.
Yes.
He's in a movie at the moment, Blockers, Cock Blockers, if you've seen the trailers for that.
I haven't. Have you seen the movie?
I haven't seen the movie. Reviews are good, though.
Okay. All right. No, I'd be interested in checking that out, actually. I just thought the visual just popped in my mind. I mean, I know Duke Nukem more. It was a game, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
Like,
I played it as a game, yeah. But you constantly think of that, like,
early 2000s,
7-foot-tall, muscled-up blonde guy with a cigar hanging out of his mouth. Like, very Arnie.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And John Cena, like, physically.
It's deliberately a throwback to that kind of time period, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the 80s, like, full-on 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And apparently, they mentioned he is involved. We don't have a script yet. That always worries me. So that is confirmed at this point. But if you read the script and he doesn't like it, I'm sure there are ways he could pull out. But right now, he's our guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty fucking obvious from these executives. But
that sounds a bit like Conan the King, which Arnie's been talking about for like 30 years. You know, I've got a script, we're working on it. That kind of thing.
I mean, statements like this, I've never understood people coming out and saying that every time.
Well, they're just saying he's attached. He hasn't signed on the dotted line.
But basically, every actor is attached until you sign. Like, that's...
True, yeah. Yeah.
And until you get a script, you can walk away, and everyone's like, yeah, I don't blame you for walking away. The script was shit.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know why they actually make that comment. We don't have a script yet. Okay, so you're a long way from... getting anything done.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Go
play the fucking game, you know, and then come back with the script.
Yeah. This has all the provenance of someone saying, you know, Cena looks a lot like Nukem.
Yeah.
Maybe we should let him do that, and they just run with it.
The only time I can ever remember this working was when the people who got the property Blade Runner put out an advertisement to Harrison Ford saying they wanted him, and I thought, there is no way Harrison will do this. But Harrison actually must have said, how much?
Yeah.
This
is following in the lines of something like a Deadpool where it was crowdfunded effectively.
Really?
Where Deadpool wasn't going to be made and they leaked the footage. That's right. I use leaked very loosely.
Yeah.
And the internet went crazy for it, so they went, okay, let's run with it. If enough people say Cena and Nukem together, then the studios will go, okay, there is actually some heat on this, let's get it happening.
Definitely.
This is just them.
Did you see Doom, the movie with The Rock? I didn't mind that movie. I saw that in the cinemas when it came out. It was like probably mid-aughts, about 2005-ish.
Okay.
Wasn't. I mean, I don't mind Doom. I've got the Xbox One game. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's not a million miles.
I played it as a game, yeah.
Not a million miles from Duke Nukem, is it? Like, sort of similar.
Sort of similar, yeah.
Yeah. It's a first-person shooter, Duke Nukem, isn't it?
Depends on which version, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, we'll see. But it's watch this space. Now, Stu, you've got some details about a new Marvel event. What's happening?
Yeah, so they announced... At the moment, they're running Infinity Countdown.
Mm.
They announced what it's counting down to. It's counting down to a new series called Infinity Wars.
Who could have possibly guessed?
I know. It's going to be a massive event over the summer in the US.
Right.
Written by Jerry Duggan, which we love.
Yep.
Yeah. Art by Mike Diodato, which, again,
he's
brilliant.
Great.
This is a great pairing.
Yeah.
They're releasing a lot more details, including, like, the list of titles and crossover events and all sort of stuff at C2E2, which is the Chicago Comic Con.
Yeah, major one.
Major event, which is starting in the upcoming week. If you're in the Chicago area, check it out.
Okay. Well, I'd be interested in seeing what Jerry Duggan does on a major event. He's a very talented writer.
Yeah.
I think he's very, very good, actually.
And this feels like Marvel are cashing in on the fact that we're having a year's gap between Avengers 3 and Avengers 4.
And you realise this is what they pulled Jim Starlin off for.
Yeah.
They pulled him off Thanos for this.
Yeah.
But I trust Jerry Duggan.
I think this is going to link in with all the popular characters at the moment.
This is your kind of thing, isn't it, Stu?
Absolutely. This is right down my alley.
Because you're a Mr. Infinity Gauntlet and Infinity War and Infinity
I love all that kind of cosmic stuff. Always have.
Are you reading Infinity Countdown?
As much as I can, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it's just like a massive cash grab.
It is. A lot of it's just a massive cash grab.
Yeah, but the actual... I'd be just interested... As a Jerry Duggan fan who really has enjoyed quite a lot of his work, I'd be interested in checking that out. Now, Stu, I had some news about... back in history, basically. So this came up on...
So you've just got a story.
I've got a story.
News from history is just a story.
I whatever. you know, it's like a retrospective.
It's not news.
It's not new news.
News is new.
Bob Dylan in his biography Chronicle, he said he doesn't like the new news. He prefers the news about the Titanic and stuff. He used to go into the New York Library.
It's not news. It's just a story.
Okay, well, whatever, Stu. The story is this. Sue Storm was based on Edith G. Fink, Stan's friend, in terms of looks. And this is interesting. Mary Jane Watson was based on Anne Margaret, a model, actress, and singer, considered one of the most beautiful women in the late 60s. She did some cool movies with Elvis and was very beautiful. And I never really put that together. But when I did, I was like, actually, Anne Margaret, who is a stunner back in the day, is very much like Mary Jane, how she was done. I thought that was quite interesting that Stan was taking it from, well, one was his friend, I guess, Sue Storm. I wonder if she could turn invisible, his friend. Did she have the force field? And, I don't know. What your comments, Stu? If you're with Anne Margaret?
No, I'm Googling her now.
She was beautiful, Stu. Anne Margaret, look, 60s, did a couple of movies with Elvis. I think she was Elvis' girlfriend for a while.
I mean, she's...
Who could blame her?
Redheaded model. Like, it's exactly what MJ is in the comics. It's.
I mean, aren't you glad you know this now? See, this is why I did the news for you. And it wasn't new news, it was old news, Stu.
Story. It's a story.
Okay, whatever. But here's another story that's come across. Fantastic Four is coming back, Stu.
See, this is news.
Written by Dan Slott and Sarah Pacelli on art. Are you excited for this?
I am excited for this. It's about time we got the Fantastic Four back.
Yes.
Coming back to another monthly slot.
Good.
So we're going to get some regular Fantastic Four. They're going to keep in the Marvel 2-in ones together.
Which we've enjoyed previously.
Which we have. So there's still going to be crossovers with, like, Human Torch and Thing.
That's good. That's good.
And then we're also getting a full run of Fantastic Four written by Dan Slott, who hopefully on a new property is going to be brilliant again.
I think you will. A big, fresh change, and there's so much to mine on Fantastic Four. You know, there's so many directions you can go.
Yeah, absolutely. We think he just got a little stale on Spider-Man because he started off brilliantly, and then he just kind of got a bit tired, I think.
Yeah, a lot of Dan Slott's Spider-Man is very, very readable. Very.
Oh, yeah. Especially the early phases. I thought it was incredible. Sure. And then he just got a little tired, a little samey.
Yeah. One flavour for too long kind of thing.
Yeah. He just kind of got into a habit and a routine, and then it kind of got a little stale.
Yeah, I agree.
Hopefully, moving on to Fantastic Four, he'll be back to his best again.
And a lot of people pay a lot of respect to Dan Slott's Silver Surfer run. It's considered an extremely good comic. He's also previously done a good She-Hulk run as well. The guy can write, for sure. Yeah. And we know he can. He stayed on Spider-Man too long, but he did for a long time. He was very good. So I'm excited by this. Actually,
his run with Spider-Man and Superior Spider-Man, Spider-Verse.
He bottomed out after. I reckon he should have left when he brought Peter back from Superior. I think that was the moment to leave.
I mean, that's a really cool place to bring it back. I don't know. I like the idea that he stuck around to do a Peter Parker story again.
Yeah.
Because there is a really cool transition where he's coming back and he's getting used to everything again. Yes, and
true. People are
struggling.
Trusting him.
Yeah, struggling to kind of overcome that image that Doc created.
Did you like Spider-Verse? I quite enjoyed Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I did.
I thought Spider-Verse was pretty cool.
Like, Morlun's a cool villain. I thought that was brilliant.
And bringing back a classic villain, Morlun. He was from, like, JMS's run, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was good.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed that as well. Slott's a great writer.
Yeah, no, we're definitely watching.
We gave him quite a bit of slack because. He's when we were doing it, he was currently writing Spidey, and it was past his peak.
I've met him, too, and spoken to him at conventions. Lovely guy.
I'm sure he
really
is.
Really lovely guy. Bit of a big old bear. You know what I mean? Like, he really struck me as a guy who loves the medium.
Yeah.
Genuinely nice guy. Now, Stu, quick shout-out here for the Judge Red page. Shout-out to Mike Bottomley. He pitched you. Get this. One night, this is before the cricket scandal broke. So back in the days.
Back when you could focus on something other than cricket.
Focus on something else other than cricket. He pitched an incredible video game of Judge Red GTA style on the Judge Red message boards. And he was putting in all these details, like the cursed earth, the mega city, all the different mega cities, like all these missions. He was blowing my mind. I was writing comments like in caps. This is the best post on this page ever.
I mean, look, this isn't a new concept. People have been arguing for a Punisher GTA-style game as well. Like,
that'd be fucking good, too.
Any character that
but fits Judge Dredd's a whole world. You know what I'm saying? Like, the whole world of all the mega cities and the cursed earth, man, the barren wasteland.
I mean, it's just a different map. But
oh, come on, dude. I would play this. If that game came out today, I would probably just say to work, I'm not going to be in for like 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. The Signal would put it on a backseat for a month as Dave works his way through a monster game.
No, maybe I could record from inside the game. You know, my contribution to the Signal could just be updates about the game.
You know, I'm glad this isn't a thing now.
What news I could find in there. I don't know what news I could find, but I'd try. You know, I actually was so traumatized the other day that I almost cancelled Signal for a week. But then I thought, no, I want to say something about the cricketers and I want to get involved and get behind the ball. And also, I do enjoy just talking and us going back and forth. But there was a brief. I'll tell you this. When I walked into work,
I wanted to take a principal stand, but then I realized that I
was too upset. But when I walked in on Monday, I had to go to a training thing and I had bronchitis. And I walked in. And as I walked in, one of the guys, the English guys I go to the cricket with, he goes, looking a bit sheepish, Finny. And I was like, oh. And of all the people.
It's like an old, like, 60s cartoon shaky, fist shaky English.
And then I was like, and then it was just like, you know, nonstop for the next hour or two. Now, Stu, I've got a shout out here. And this comes, actually, Michael Kellershim wrote in as well with this news. Sad story. Comic book writer and artist Bill Messenger Loebs worked on Wonder Woman and Thor. I've actually got his Wonder Woman trait out there, was a creator of The Max, which is a show which was on MTV in the 90s. Yeah. Now, homeless in Flint, Michigan. Stu, he's got one arm, basically no cash. It's a really sad story. Got a very sick wife.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And people, if you can link to it, there is the option of trying to help this guy out. I mean, he's really struggling. And they have a thing called the Heroes Initiative for exactly this kind of scenario. And I've heard of other creators too, Stu, who had landmark careers, like not flash in the pans. There are some guys out there and women out there who've worked so hard and have so little to show for it. And I don't mean to make it seem like corporates are the big bad, but sometimes the companies profit so much off this. This guy's homeless with one fucking arm and a sick wife. He's like in his 70s, Stu. He's working like, you know, part-time to try to pay some bills. And meantime, still going to conventions and still trying to generate some sort of income from their conventions, you know, and sketches.
Good on him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's going hard. And I mean, to top it all off, the guy's lost an arm. I mean, it just sucks, man.
Yeah.
You know, I genuinely feel so bad for him. He wrote some Batman as well, I believe. And he definitely wrote Wonder Woman. I've got the Wonder Woman trade out there with Mike Deodato on art.
Wow.
And it's a good trade, man. Like, it's like 90s... Wonder Woman. He's considered quite a talent. Like, The Max was one of those things that blew up really big in the 90s for, you know,
I mean, it's always hard to see a talent, like an actual talent, go through tough times.
Oh, for sure.
Especially when you see other people that are hacking together stories.
Yeah, I know.
That are successful and making a lot of money.
They just bounce from... Some people just bounce from failure to failure. Shit doesn't seem to stick, you know? They sort of fail upwards in the
industry. Yeah, I don't know.
It happens, you know?
Yeah, I think it's hugely dependent on what kind of publicity you get and what kind of agent you have, isn't it? I mean,
and most of his work was done. I read the story. He, you know, was a writer who had some acclaim, and then he had the Max thing, and he then went through a period of profitability.
Mm.
Bought a house. At some point, he'd lost the house, and then they moved to like a mobile home. I assume like a sort of trailer situation, and then that was declared unlivable due to a gas leak. And he now literally is going from like shelter to shelter with a wife who's in a wheelchair. I mean, it's as sad as it gets, man. Yeah. I just want to say, rather than me get on my violin, if you can help this guy out, type it into Google. There's actually like a fund and stuff set up for him, sort of thing. And I mean, honestly, I'm not one to normally give much to charity, but I think I probably will in this scenario. And it'll be a small token gesture, but hopefully someone could, because this guy doesn't deserve this, you know what I mean? And it broke my heart hearing about the wife as well, who's in the wheelchair, and he's talking to her. Like, this isn't a guy. A reporter sought him out for this story, Stu. This guy wasn't going to the press. Someone he heard about it, this reporter, and investigated the story and got to the bottom of it. And he even said to him, I can't do it on Sunday because I've got to go to a convention. I've got to get some sort of cash together, whatever I can get, you know. And I hear from other creators too who are lesser than this guy, and they're going from convention to convention scratching out what they can, man, in terms of ink, you know, drawings and stuff when people come up.
But yeah, I mean, this isn't a highly paid industry that we love. It is a slog unless you become ultra successful. And there are maybe a dozen writers currently that are successful enough to be known outside of the comic book community.
And it's the key is getting that guy, getting that character who can be a big enough crossover hit that he or she starts appearing in multiple media platforms and stuff. Then you have some sort of revenue stream. It's a lot tougher.
Yeah, like it tends to be people like your Frank Millers. They're known outside of the comic book world. They're massive stars.
He had 300. He has Sin City, all lots of different things.
Yeah, like he's gone on to Chuck do multiple Bane, industries.
You know, someone like Chuck had Bane, which blew up huge. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he's not... Chuck is massive inside the comic book industry.
Exactly.
But outside of the comic book industry, people don't hurt
him. That's what I'm saying, but luckily he had... Bane.
Luckily, he has had a monster hit within that industry.
Yeah, but you're right. I asked my mother.
People like Neil Gaiman is also known outside of the industry, and he's probably the most well-known outside of the comic book industry.
I would definitely say that, yeah, for sure.
But there are maybe a dozen guys that are known outside, and that's where you start making real money, when you can cross over multiple industries.
100% right, Stu. Well, anyway, so keep him in your thoughts. Bill Messenger Loebs, he really is a gifted writer. His Wonder Woman's very good. I can say that for a fact, having got the trade and having read it. Now, Stu, it's time for Weekly Comics. Aren't you glad I'm back in full voice? Yeah, I've got a beautiful voice these days since I've come back from my throat infection.
I like that every week it's a new take.
Thank you.
And all of them are terrible.
Now, I want to say this. this week, my readings... I've been scatterbrained this week with the emotions I've been going through. I've been struggling to concentrate. So I did read all this stuff over the last day or so, but I'm not sure how good my reviews, I know, are normally very in-depth, very incisive.
Yeah, well, I've got to admit, I read all of this at about 3 a.m. this morning. Okay, so
well, let's kick it off.
Reviews are going to be of a high quality this week.
Well, let's kick it off with Dark Knight's Metal, issue 6, and the finale. Stu, I found the first half of this comic so fucking confusing, but then I enjoyed the back half of the comic quite a lot. I gave it a 7 out of 10 overall. It does wrap the story up. What did you think of this comic, Stuart?
I read the first half and then gave up.
You gave up, did you?
I stopped. I read everything else. And then I saw your little one-line review in our show notes that basically said the back half is interesting.
Yeah, did you like the back half?
So I went back and tried to read it again. And it is a solid... edition. Like,
well, just some character moments, you know.
The second time through, it made a lot more sense. I enjoyed it a little more.
Yeah. It wasn't great, though, was it?
No, this... It's a complicated story, this one.
Yes.
This is not a simple crossover event. This is a massive event with multiple realities all colliding.
Which we've enjoyed a lot at times.
Yeah, we have.
I almost feel like it got a bit lost in itself.
Yeah, it's kind of a little too complicated for its own good.
And
especially in the finale when they brought in whole new characters to save the day. And
there's a lot going on in that finale.
Swoop, where they pick up a bunch of good Batman as well as to battle the evil Batman.
There was a lot of just coming in from the sidelines.
Yeah. By the way, here's 15 new dimensions worth of characters.
Yeah.
So, look, I did enjoy it. The second read helped.
Will you still get the hardcover? Because I don't think I will. I think it's actually diminished to a point where I won't be picking up the hardcover.
I feel like if you just bought the Dark Knight's Metal trade with 6 volumes in it, that would be a better read.
Sure.
I think I would enjoy reading that, and I'll probably buy a copy of that trade.
Okay.
I'm giving this one a 6.5 out of 10. It was anything that takes you 2 tries to read as a single weekly issue.
Yeah.
That's a hard sell.
Interesting, at the end, they really started trying to set up some other titles, didn't they? Oh, my God, at the end.
Yeah, this was clearly...
I hate that, actually, when they
DC's
do that.
Telling us we need to promote this, this, and this.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah.
So they spend half the issue wrapping up their story, and then the other half is just, let's satisfy what DC...
How about this? We don't have anything right now. Just titles. Literally, they say that. And they started naming titles. I find that lazy.
Yeah.
Lazy. It's like, get this, kids. Dark Stars, it's going to pop. And then they're like, Dark Pantheon, that's going to pop. And it's like, wow, you're not even giving me images, just giving me fucking book titles.
They're just like putting dark and then a word. Yeah. That's all they're doing at the moment.
That was eye-rolling for me. No, for me, this event, I thought, started real strong, had some really good sort of side titles, crossover titles, whatever you want to call them. But then, tie-ins is the word. And then I found it lost a lot of momentum overall.
Yeah, the tie-ins giving us the intros to all those Batman.
Yeah, I enjoyed them mostly.
I really enjoyed them. Yeah. That was probably my favourite part of this event.
But they were kind of worthless then. When it got back to the main story, they didn't really sort of... The people were there, but they weren't doing much.
No, but I think that was the coolest crossover I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
With those little origins. As a whole, it's been a pretty successful event.
Yep.
I would say it's been a successful event.
It's definitely, done well sales-wise.
Yeah.
But you mean creatively as well? Like,
oh, yeah, on all fronts. I think this has done...
I'd give it a 7 well. Out of 10 overall. I wouldn't give it a high.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's around a 7 to an 8. It's
okay.
It's not blown anyone out of the water.
I think you're liking it a bit more than me. I enjoyed it without loving it, you know?
Yeah, a couple of times I actually went back and started from issue 1 and read through to the current issue.
Okay.
So, like, when I hit number 2, I had to do 1 and 2.
Sure.
And then when I did 4, I read 1 through 4. And that really helped.
That might have helped, because it was a complex story.
It was, and I'm not hugely familiar with a lot of things, like, when they're talking about the Nth Metal and, like, Hawkman and that. Like, I've never been a huge
when
Hawkman
when people started
person.
Pulling out all those medals at the end, I was kind of tuning out. Like, it's Metal 10!
Yeah, exactly. The 10th medal. This is the 9th. I was kind of a bit lost and didn't really care.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hawkman's never been a huge favourite of mine.
Oh, no.
So when they're trying to link it all to him, I was a bit over it.
They're only doing that because he's got the most confusing origin of all time, which DC have never been able to sort out.
Yeah.
So they're sort of playing off that.
Exactly. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, well executed for what it was, but, enjoyable.
How enjoyable do you find it when people start going, that's so metal? Because that was starting to get a lot of references in the last issue. That was annoying.
Yeah, that was pretty
I'd be interested if listeners out there have their own opinions on Dark Knight's metal, let us know, because I think it's one that's going to have different kinds of opinions. Now, Stu, I'm fascinated to see what you think of Doomsday Clock 4. Basically, it's the origin of the new Rorschach. I got to be honest, great art. Okay, the art's great on this title.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the origin for what it was, but I was questioning the entire point of this whole issue. Like, you gave us, and even of the whole exercise, we're now 4 issues in, they're long issues, and the origin's okay, but I was like, is anyone really crying out for this story? Like, it just seemed very inessential to me. Where are you?
I mean, it cleared up what we were sort of talking about last time, which was what's the deal with Rorschach. Yep. That's not the original Rorschach.
Turns out it wasn't from what did I say? He was from an alternate dimension Rorschach, so it wasn't that.
I can't remember.
I said it was like an alternate dimension Rorschach that Ozymandias may have brought in.
Okay.
I was wrong.
I think we did speculate that it could just be a different person that took up the mantle.
Yeah, which it was.
Effectively what it was.
Yeah.
Although he was, like, linked to the original Rorschach.
Yeah. What did you think? It was kind of confusing. Were you confused at times in this story?
At times, yes, because I wasn't sure what was real and what wasn't.
Mm.
I liked the Mothman character.
Yes.
I thought that was a really cool little piece, especially at the end when the massive fire's on and he runs into it. Like a moth drawn to the flame. I thought that was...
How about when he just took off from the thing? And I thought he was just going to crash down and he just flew off.
Yeah, and he just flies off. Like with this wingsuit made of bed sheets.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, there were cool elements in this. Visually, it was cool. Overall, I'm not a huge fan of this series.
No, me either, Stu. I had higher expectations, but as we're getting deeper into it, I'm getting less interested.
Honestly, and I hate to say this, this is kind of what Alan Moore was whinging about, that they're not treating his characters and this is exactly right. Like, this is DC just going, fuck it, let's do what we want.
Oh, it's a cash grab, it sure is.
And these characters aren't being used well.
I'd be happier if it was a cash grab that was interesting, though. This is a cash grab that's actually, I find, quite boring.
Yeah, this is just them cashing in on the fact those names are in the title.
Yeah, like, when I got to the end of this issue, which was the origin of Rorschach, I was kind of like, that was a lot of pages, to read, to get...
It felt long.
Which was not a particularly enthralling read.
No, this felt like a long read.
And you do get Geoff Johns is trying to do his Alan Moore impersonation from the 80s, and it ain't really that good.
No.
Like, it's very much an imitator, you know, and especially just not Geoff Johns' strong suit, you know? Geoff Johns has done so much good work in comics, and this feels like he's deliberately trying to do his mid-80s Alan Moore, and it's not seeing to me.
Yeah, no, this was a little disappointing for me.
What'd you give it out of 10, Stu?
I gave it a 6.
I gave it a 7, but it's more like a 6.5 or a 6. You know, 7 when I was being a bit generous. The art is nice. It's good art.
The art is nice. Occasionally I'd get a little confused. There was a couple of characters that looked very similar.
It's very dark as well, isn't it?
It is quite dark visually. I don't know. Like, it is passable if you're liking this event. This kind of gives you a better backstory, gives you a little more in-depth.
If you were that guy who read Watchmen, would you be saying rush out and read this? Because I don't know if I would.
No, see, I think the opposite. I think this isn't for people that are a fan of Watchmen.
Right.
If you're a fan of Watchmen, this is going to annoy you.
Yeah.
Because this isn't Watchmen.
Yeah.
These aren't the characters that you love and you want to read more of. This is kind of a bastardized version of those characters.
Yeah, it very much is. I agree.
So
yeah.
I think if you're a true fan of Watchmen, this is going to upset you more than anything else. So,
but that's the market they're going after, all the Watchmen readers.
I feel like they're going after the comic book readers that know Watchmen is good but haven't read it.
Ah, I see, yeah.
Like people that are aware that Watchmen is amazing, but they're still firmly entrenched in superhero comics.
Got it, yeah.
And that's who they're going after?
That's a good point, Stu, actually. That's a very good point.
Because there are a lot of readers out there that because of the movies, because of the hype, are reading a lot of Marvel and DC superheroes.
Yeah.
But they're completely unaware that there's...
They know there's...
Sections of this industry where there are detectives and there's westerns and there's...
Yeah.
All this sort of stuff that's not superhero-based.
Yeah.
And this is kind of
which
trying to get
was,
into it.
So many different genres before
superheroes. Well, that's the origin of comic books. It was westerns and love stories and...
Exactly.
Comic book strips and newspapers. So, I don't know. Yeah, the Phantom was a big one.
I like the Phantom. It was pretty good.
He's still going, I think, isn't he?
He never stops. He's caught with his dog, Devil. Stu, I'm back from dying. I've lived. I'm alive, Stu. I'm in strong voice. Stu, I'm giving Doomsday Clock a 6.5 out of 10. And you're giving it a 6, yeah?
Yeah, I gave it a 6.
And I feel we're being probably a bit generous. It's really not that good.
Look, the artwork's fine. It's not up to the standards of Watchmen that we're holding it to, which I think is the biggest problem here.
Yeah.
We're holding it to really high standards.
It's also a little inessential.
It is, but you're always going to get that in the middle of a run.
True.
Look, this is typical filler, middle of an event type stuff.
Good point.
Look, we're holding it to high standards, and I think that you need that when you're looking at Watchmen.
Do you think we'll keep going week to week? Well, it's only bi-monthly, so I guess we can keep doing it. It's only one every 2 months.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can do that. Now, Stu, Terrifics 2, I really enjoyed this comic. This was my favourite comic of the week to read. I gave it 8 out of 10. I thought it was really enjoyable. Where are you, Stu? Because this really is kind of a more of a DC obscure list.
Yeah, it is. I don't have the knowledge to understand these characters. I'm kind of reading it more or less for the first time.
They're all C-listers. Plastic Man, Metamorpho.
Plastic Man I'm the most familiar with. I've read some Plastic Man.
He's pretty good.
He's always funny. I actually quite enjoy him. Metamorpho, again, I'm familiar with.
In the first comic book I ever bought, Metamorpho. Rex Mason.
But, like, Tom Strong that they introduced in the...
Alan Moore character.
Hologram, I'm completely unfamiliar with him.
Kind of a throwback retro hero, is the best way to think of him.
Yeah, this is... I don't know, it's an interesting story. I like the sense of humour that this book has.
Yeah, I think it's a book that's succeeding despite having... elusive characters that are so minor that I feel you can almost just walk in and start reading them. You know? Like, they're not... The stakes are very low, you know?
This is almost something you could introduce someone to comic books with.
Yeah, no,
You don't need a huge level of knowledge to get into it.
No.
It's a pretty light-hearted, quick-moving story.
Yep.
It's got a lot of things going for it, and it's pretty enjoyable. Like, I'm giving it a 7.5 out of 10.
I think it's a very fair score. I'd actually encourage listeners, if you're kind of more of a... You're either a bit bored of just, like, you know, your Batman, Superman, like, you know, A and B dynamic, or you're just looking for a foothold to get to read something that's a good read, pick up Terrifics. I think it's actually I thought this was also an improvement on the first issue. I felt, you know when you read a second issue, you're like, I'm more invested now.
Yeah. See, I think you've got to be a comic book reader.
Sure.
To read this.
Yep.
But I think you're right. I think if you're a typical, like, Batman reader.
Sure.
And you want something a little with a different flavour, I think this is a great place to go.
Exactly.
This is your alternate version for someone that's already into comic books and knows they're going to like comics.
Now, Stu, turning to our final comic of the week, Avengers 686. I read this about 5 minutes before you turned up. I was actually reading at the same time as I was playing my game. I was doing two things at once. And that's Australia lost to Afghanistan in 2020, which is, you know, we can blame on this comic. I
just lost every US listener to the cricket reference.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm very emotional this week. I keep thinking that I'm going to stop reading this Avengers thing, but each issue I'm interested in this story. I constantly keep thinking, am I going to read another weekly Avengers story because it's so unusual for me? But I find this story very readable.
It's a return to form for Marvel. We haven't seen this level of quality for a long time, and Avengers is showing that Marvel's still got it.
If it's you get consistent. The right,
if you get the right writers on it, you can use the right characters, right artists. It works still, and
the art's great.
The art's fantastic. Yeah. I'm loving that they've brought back the Hulk and they're running through a whole story with him.
Yes,
I'm loving the dynamic between Bruce and the Hulk.
Yeah, Bruce is trapped a long way inside the Hulk, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's kind of unresponsive in there.
Yeah, it's almost like he's been crippled.
Yeah, disabled. And they've now got this intelligent Hulk, which is scary. And
he's mean.
And they're all, like, terrified because this is the smart Hulk.
Yep. And he smashes the pyramids, Stu.
Yes. In the twist, he kind of destroys the final pyramid, which is a foul in the game.
Yeah. And then that really annoyed the Challenger. He had a go at the Grandmaster then.
Well, no. Because the Challenger controls the Hulk. The Challenger was going to lose that game because he smashed the pyramid.
Mm.
And then it came out that Voyager was the daughter of the Grandmaster. So they're now both in this argument of who lost the game first.
Yeah. Because the Grandmaster's a bit of a prick, isn't he?
The Grandmaster... And the other thing that I enjoyed was they went through Voyager's perspective on why they're playing the game.
Mm.
And the Grandmaster is playing to win.
Yes.
Whereas the heroes are kind of in this to help other people and to save other people.
Well, they're just thrown into it, aren't they?
Yeah.
They don't have a choice.
And the Challenger is playing it for his life. Like, he is back from this void, and he's playing for something bigger than himself.
That's right, because the Grandmaster beat him back when.
Yeah, and so kind of Voyager's having this crisis of faith, which isn't no... Like, she's lived with the Grandmaster for so long, and now she's kind of aware that he's just playing this game for shits and giggles.
The Grandmaster's a prick. He's a manipulating prick.
This comic has a lot... there's more levels to this than most people realise on first reading.
I actually really am enjoying this a lot.
This is my favourite comic of the week. I really enjoyed this.
Well, to be honest, I'd give it like a solid 7.5 to 8 out of 10. I think it's a very good comic.
I had it as an 8.5 out of 10. I solidly enjoy this. This Avengers run has been really fun.
Really good, and it's leading to the Jason Aaron comic as well.
Exactly. This is all great news for me. Yeah, I'm loving this.
Jason Aaron, just this today I saw on Twitter, posted up like, and on a day came like no other, you know, the tagline for the Avengers, and it was some pics, I think, to his first Avengers issue, which is coming in a couple of months.
Issue 12 of 16, so there's a month left on this title.
And I can't think of too many events that run for 16 issues where 12 issues in, I'm still totally invested.
They've kept the pace up, they've kept everything moving, and so far it's been really cool.
And I'm lazy. Every week I think, will I bother reading this again? And then I read it, I'm like, man, that was a buzz.
Yeah.
It reads quickly, it reads fast.
Every week I read an issue and I'm going, well, I'm going to read the next issue now. Yeah. This is good enough that I'll get me back in there.
Yep, definitely.
And a week later, I'm going to buy one next week.
I like they're using a wide cast as well. They're casting a wide net of heroes. You know, there's a lot going on. You get a lot of different faces.
Yeah, and they're not all A-grade. Like, there's multiple characters in there, like Lightning.
Yeah, Lightning. Who's ever even heard of that
character? Like a CD-lister.
Yeah.
But then you've got them fighting alongside, like, Thor.
Yes.
Like, it's a really great mix of
characters. This obviously takes place before the death of Jane Foster, because she died in the comics. Like,
it does, yeah.
Yeah. That's always funny, isn't it? Where it's like, you do get those people like, how can Wolverine be in one place when he's in another? It's called comic books, guys.
I mean, I get that argument, though. I really do understand it, that it's difficult
It's difficult in this one because she's in it and she's totally fine.
Yeah.
As Thor.
But, like, I think the way I've read it, and I don't know if this is technically the correct way to read these, is that each event in a comic book is taking place at a time in each character's life.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily in chronological order. Like, what we're reading now...
That's the way to take it, yeah.
Yeah, what we're reading now as this event, this 16-part event, isn't necessarily happening now. It's just an event that these characters went through.
It could have happened last week, you know, and they came back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, look, you can form a timeline with what these characters have done, but it's going to jump all over the place.
Well, it's like what we did Secret Wars, when Marvel really cared about trying to make you believe it was all part of one narrative.
Yeah.
Where they went to the battle world... And then the next issue of their comics showed them back, but then for the year, the Secret Wars was playing out what actually happened in Battle World.
Exactly. Or like 52 that we've been reading.
Very good point.
Where it's not chronologically in order in terms of we recap that last year that we missed while concurrently running on a current run. So
sometimes
you've got to kind of take these events as... separate insular things.
Definitely.
Link up the characters at the end. Like, think about it as in terms of, like what we said, clearly for Jane Foster's Thor, this event is happening prior to the death of Thor.
Yes. I think if you can accept that, you're fine. I think, don't overthink it. Sometimes comics will do a really funny thing. There's a great Wolverine issue with Jason Aaron. It's around 300, where basically he does a day in the week. And each day of the week, Wolverine is in all these different groups.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And he's so tired when he gets to Sunday, and he's so worn out. And so Jason Aaron makes a story about it. It's one of my favorite things, because you really see that without having to bother with... It makes a story out of how can he be in all these different places at once? Well, he's in all these different places at once because he's overworked and exhausted. it was just cool. And he sort of, like, doesn't even really want to do it. You know what I mean? He's kind of been dragged into it, sort of thing, like by that point with the Wolverine personality. Now, Stu, we're coming to Trade of the Week. This was one of your picks, Pacific Rim, Tales from the Drift.
Yeah, so this is... I've never read it before.
Me either.
It was a case of Pacific Rim's coming out. Do you want to do a trade, Dave?
Have you seen Uprising yet?
I haven't seen Uprising yet.
I want to see it. I'll try to see it by the time we do next show.
Okay.
We'll try over Easter, I think. Could sneak out and see it, you know?
Sure.
I am interested in seeing it. I've heard some decent reviews, by the way.
Excellent.
I've heard some mixed reviews, but to be honest, did you enjoy the first Pacific Rim?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, me too.
I thought it was really fun. I mean, Benicio del Toro's incredible. Yeah. I love his work.
Guillermo
del Toro.
You're thinking of the guy from Star Wars?
Yeah.
Star Wars? He's in Last Jedi, Benicio del Toro.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He plays that stuttering guy, the thief.
Remember? Yeah, that's like the... I don't know, I never think of him in Star Wars.
I was just trying to think of his most recent...
He's so big in all of his other movies, yeah.
He's a great actor.
The Collector is normally...
He's a fantastic actor, I love him.
Yeah.
Now...
Guillermo del Toro as well.
Guillermo del Toro, yeah. And this would have come out around that time.
So this came out in 2015.
Okay.
And it was kind of... The idea for it came from del Toro.
Okay.
He suggested that they do a spin-off comic and kind of tell backstories from some of the minor characters.
Mm-hmm. Am I right in saying the young girl who's with the character that Idris Elba played in the movie, that's the girl that grows up that goes into the machines, into the Jaegers? You know that Japanese girl? She's young in this comic, but in the movie she's like growing up.
Yeah, so this is... Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how the timeline works out. This comic is set... 3 years after the first kaiju appearance.
Yes, right, okay.
I think they say like 1,080.
Well, that would make sense, because in the movies they've been around for a while.
Yeah. So this is set like 3 years after the first appearance of the kaiju. And I actually... First issue in, I was on the fence. I wasn't sure where this was going.
I found issue one very confusing.
It was a little confusing. They drop you in this story. And there's two separate kind of times running at the same... pace. By issue 2 and 3, I understood where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
And the time this wraps up in 4 issues, like, it's a quick read.
It is a quick read. I read it all in about probably 40 minutes.
Yeah, so did I. It's an actually really enjoyable story.
Yes, I'd agree. I would almost say it's a... I kept thinking it's like a... It's very much like a painting. It's not necessarily narratively that important. It's more of a feeling. It's a story of two people who are in the Jaegers together, who have that link.
Yeah.
And it tells their relationship, but it sort of tells it in a weird backstory way in the middle of a fight where they're drifting through the rift, which I thought was a novel idea.
Yeah. So you see this husband and wife team in a Jaeger battling a kaiju.
And when they meet, they can't stand each other originally.
And then, yeah, literally in the next panel over, like, it does jump between the two times.
Mm.
It's their first meeting.
Yeah.
How they met when they were kind of around kaiju and Jaegers and... how they meet, how they hate each other at first, how they don't work together, and then they test well together.
They're both very much alpha personalities, you could say.
Yeah, they are. They're both dominant, and but they match together, so they can run a Jaeger together.
Yep. And then they become lovers, which sort of becomes more prominent right at the end.
But I like the way they introduced the drift.
Yeah.
That was cool for me. Like, this shared mental space.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
Where these two people work together, and that's how they control these Jaegers.
Because in the first movie, two brothers, remember?
Yeah, yeah. But in the movies, you just see them link mentally, and that's you don't see them where they are mentally.
No, they just...
This shows, like, the dreamscape where the two personalities are.
Yeah.
And originally, you see these two completely opposite landscapes. Like, one's traditional Japanese, the other one's, like, a desert.
It's like the outback, because he's from Australia.
Yeah. And they're kind of clashing and hating each other.
Because, of course, we're all in the outback, Stu.
We are. We're all in the outback. We're all pet
kangaroos.
This
is coming to you from the top of Ayers Rock.
Top of Uluru, yeah. So I really enjoyed that sense of looking into what they're experiencing, like mentally, spiritually kind of thing.
Yeah, no, and that was almost unexpected because I was so confused by the first issue that I was like, oh, here we go, another one of Stu's picks. And then I was like...
I was in the same boat.
And then I was like, actually, no, I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, actually.
So you see these characters grow together at the same time as you see them in their final battle.
Mm.
And it's this great kind of, I wouldn't say love story.
Yeah, it's
certainly a characters like, of two stories, two characters that are in love.
Yes.
But
they're military focused. And they're they're taking one for the team. I liked it when I think it was the Japanese girl, maybe it was Idris Elba's character. He said, they're brave. They're not just willing to lose their own life. They're willing to lose the other person as well. Sort of like, that was an important comment, I thought, because it really was, because I think the other partner meant more to them than they meant to themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
They were kind of like, giving up their own life wasn't an issue for them.
Because I've often thought that. Like, here's a conversation I used to have with one of my workmates, J-Dog, actually. Shout out to James Davies out there. We used to say, if you were in, like, World War II, so not Hitler as a baby, you're in, like, the German high command, Stuart. Okay. You're in the room. And you see Hitler there, would you just pull out a gun and shoot him without any risk to your own life or not?
Sorry, if I was a German?
No, not if you're a German. If you like, time travel, have wound up in the room, so you inhabit the body of, like, a member of the German High Command, you have access to killing Hitler.
So the scenario is, I could kill Hitler, but it would cost me my life.
Yeah, be a suicide mission. Yeah.
But it would stop World War II from happening.
Yeah, you could prevent further tragedy.
See, I don't know. It's, like, mathematically and logically...
Mm.
Obviously, I think everyone's in the same boat, which is one life is worth a million other people.
Yeah, but see,
one person sacrificed themselves and saved a million deaths, that person is a hero. But when it's your life, it's different.
Yeah, but, like, the thing is, this is the question we used to talk about. Like, at times in my life, I haven't valued my life that highly that I wouldn't do it. It wouldn't stop me, really. I'm like, what, you know, like, my life is worth this. I don't really care that much. You know, like I can be a bit nihilistic at times. Like, see, it doesn't always come down to bravery. You can sometimes think, oh, it doesn't worry me. Fuck it.
I mean, there's that... I can't remember how they describe it, but that's the train track kind of scenario that they had in, like, Psychology 101, I think it is.
Yeah.
the
only kind of psychology I ever did.
But it kind of gets you to think about how far you would go and whether it's okay to commit murder.
Sure.
So the scenario is kind of you've got... a train coming down a track, and it's going to hit five workers that are working on that track, unless you pull a lever and switch tracks.
Right.
But on the other track, there's a mother and a child.
Oh, ouch.
Like, do you let five people die, or do you let two people die?
They're the only two options you got?
That's the only two options. And most people say you pull a lever, two lives are worth less than five lives.
See, for me, the mother and the child's the killer there.
But, like, these five workers could all be fathers.
Good
like,
point, sure. Yeah, I get it.
Or they could be mothers and fathers.
There's no right answer, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. And the kind of...
What would you do? See, for me, the mother and the child, I've got to think about single mothers. So I couldn't kill the mother.
We don't, like... I don't know enough details. For me, it's a 2 versus 5 thing.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah, again, yeah.
And then the next scenario is what happens if it's like a sibling, like your sibling, on one track and 10 workers on the other.
Jeez.
Like, would you kill...
Putting Greg on the spot.
Would you kill 10 people as opposed to one family member of yours?
I probably... Yeah, it's a tricky question, but I probably...
And it goes deeper and more complicated than that, but that's what this comic is kind of getting you to think about.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Is your life and the people
you care about... But you didn't answer my question. Would you... See, I would kill Hitler. I don't care myself. I would think about all those Jews and all the people he's killed, and I would just do it and fuck it. You know? I would. I can tell you for a fact. There's just that moment in my... And years ago,
I think a lot of people would say that, but I think in the moment, it's a very different proposition.
Yeah, okay.
No, because pulling that trigger is effectively committing suicide.
No, I dig it.
I think a lot of people aren't capable of making that kind of decision.
And 10 years ago, when I had this conversation with James, it was a lot easier for me to want to do that. As in, I didn't value my life as much as I value it now. So it'd be much harder for me now to do that.
See, I honestly don't know. I think that's it's a really tough question.
You were a guy in your prime. You know, I can understand it. You let Hitler live and kill millions. That's okay.
I think everyone constantly kind of thinks that if they are in that scenario, they could.
Yeah.
But the other...
Well, I remember James said, no, he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it because
you could find other ways to do it, like change... Sure. Sure. Change scenarios that would mean that he didn't become that level of
or you could do it more covertly and get away with it.
Yeah, like people always try to find loopholes in these scenarios. Yes. And
but your train track thing is good because that's a deep question. That gets deep.
Like it gets really hard.
What would you do if it was your sibling? I couldn't do it for my sister.
See, I don't know. It's really tough because...
He's driving you today, Stu, so, you know.
I know.
He's doing your favourite day. He was my tennis partner for many years, so don't forget that.
But, like, if you save your brother or your sister...
Yeah.
You've got to live with 10 families that have lost someone because of you.
Yeah, no, it's... I get it.
Or you've got to live with your family for the rest of your life, knowing what you did for them. Like, it's...
Yeah, no, I dig it, yeah.
It's, these hypotheticals get really deep really quickly.
That's Psych 101, man. No wonder I never did Psych fucking 102. Like, Psych 101 did a number on me. Well, I mean, look, this is an interesting comic. There is a little bit of a romance. I will say on the minus side, the art, although very intriguing and sort of very impressionistic, I didn't think conveyed the battle scenes very well.
Yeah, I found the battle between the Jaegers and the Kaiju.
Yeah, which should be awesome.
Yeah, and a couple of the scenes were.
Yeah.
I found it quite confusing at times.
Yeah.
Often they were battling in a bay, so the water would splash up and cover up bits and pieces. You didn't know whether claws were coming from the Jaeger or the Kaiju at times. No, or just blades.
It didn't make a lot of sense, you know.
It was quite a messy, confusing fight.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that was the strong point.
No. No, I found the strongest point was when they were in the drift together.
Yeah, the drift was cool, yeah.
There were panels where the fight looked really cool.
Mm.
Like the final scene where they sliced the Kaiju in half.
That was easily the best scene.
I loved that scene. Mm. I thought that fight scene was brilliantly done. It's definitely got pluses and minuses. Mm. I found this an enjoyable read. I'm glad I read this.
Well, me too, for sure. And great franchise. Like, I like Pacific Rim. I'm interested to see how the movie does.
Yeah.
The sequel. Look,
I like this idea that they're taking this massive blockbuster and going, here's a little comic book run for a minor character that nobody really cares about in the movie.
No.
Like, these characters are unknown characters.
Well, they're dead, aren't they, in the movie? Like, they're not even in the movie, these two couple. Are they?
I'm not sure.
Idris Elba and the Japanese girl are, but certainly this husband-wife team, as far as I'm aware, weren't in it.
Yeah, but they might be, like, references to Easter egg references kind of thing.
Could be, yeah.
But it just deepens this universe a little bit. It gives you some insight into how these pilots work together on a level that you can't get in the movies.
Yeah, no, there's definitely more. I wonder if the new movie will do more about the... I love the Jaegers, man. They're very...
The concept of Pacific Rim is great. I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
The old school monster versus, like, basically a giant Transformer.
And then they also combine it with the fact that there needs to be two people in there and, you know, with the mind meld.
Yeah, and two people have to work together. Like, there's just instant teamwork and connections.
And I love the original movie where they were, like, such desperados out there. You know what I mean? Like, it was such a full-on military invasion.
Yeah.
Like, they were really pressed up against the wall. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a great series. I actually really enjoyed this weekly read.
Yeah, no, it was good. I'd give it a...
It's better than what I was expecting.
It's better than I was expecting. I didn't know what to expect. I'd give it a soft 7.5, frankly.
Yeah, so would I, actually. It's sitting around a 7.5 for me. It's enjoyable. In terms of a non-superhero comic, I think it's one of the best we've
got. Oh, yeah, yeah. And the more non-superhero comics I read, make me realise there's plenty of good ones out there.
Absolutely. You
know, for sure. I mean, don't forget that the comic book industry is built on stuff like Westerns and everything, just because they went out of... because it went out of flavour.
It's rare for it to come this way, though. This went from massive movie into spin-off comic.
Oh, sure. Any good.
We're so used to it being the other way around.
Yeah.
Or this blockbuster coming into comic being terrible.
Exactly. We're used to that as well. There's a lot of really bad licensed comics out there to do with movies.
Yeah, but this concept works really well with comic books.
Yeah. For sure.
There have been a few Pacific Rim titles.
There's one called Tales from Year Zero, which I believe is highly regarded.
Yeah. So this is kind of a 2015 little mini-series that we thought was perfect.
Just four issues, bang.
I really recommend reading it, if you can.
You can pick it up on Amazon. I think I saw it at Kinikaneer. It's around. It's available. We read it digitally.
It
was a quick read, too. It was a quick read. And Joshua Hale-Fialkov has done various other things. He's done a bit of work for Marvel, I know. He's gone on to other things as well.
That's the other thing we should mention. This is Legendary Comics. This isn't one of the biggest houses.
300 comes from Legendary Comics.
Yeah.
Various different things come from there. They've got some interesting movie deals as well.
But this isn't one of the big...
No.
One of the big houses or like an Image even. It is kind of the... fourth or fifth biggest comic
house. Dark Horse and et cetera. It's with Boom Studios.
Yeah. So it's down the list, but they're producing these great little stories.
Frank Miller does some work with them. Holy Terror, a very controversial Frank Miller book that I personally found very, very emotional. It's all about basically when Frank Miller, when 2001 happened, September 11, he wanted to do Batman going and killing Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And he did start it. And eventually him and DC said, look, we can't do this. Like, it's too politically hot. And Frank Miller then did basically the story in Holy Terror. And I'm not going to get political, but I will say this. It's a work of a very damaged soul at a time that damaged people. And it's interesting, you know. And that's all I'll say about it. Like, other than that, check it out. Make your own opinions. But Legendary do some interesting stuff.
They do, yeah.
I think they're backed by Chinese film finances and stuff. So they've got some weight.
That's good.
Now, Stu,
the more competition we get in this industry, the better.
Totally, man. Now, as we get to next week, which will be issue 56, I believe we're doing more 52.
Yeah, we're doing volume 2 of 52.
Cool, because tell you what, I got a lot of feedback on 52, our episode. People enjoyed it and they want to read more. And
we've encouraged
some people to read it too. Like, not sure, I haven't read it. I've read about one issue more since, and I'm ready to
go. This is a first time run through for me. I've never read 52. Cool.
I'm not a Booster Gold story, man. I want to find out what happens there, you know? Remember the Booster Gold?
Absolutely.
Subplot? Now, Stu, after that, we've got 2 weeks of Avengers. Am I right in saying?
Yeah, we've got 2 weeks of Avengers coming up to the lead up of Infinity War. And obviously
I reckon we'll see Infinity War, Stu.
Oh, probably. I may have already purchased multiple tickets.
Yeah, we might actually get out there.
Mate, I'll be lucky to see
Have you filled up Rowell yet or whatever it was?
Mate, that cinema's so packed. God.
It's a lovely life, aren't you?
I'm booking out cinemas on my own. Man, this is crazy.
Stu and all these... You got all these friends, though, as well, which I don't have that, man. I have, like, some close associates. I kind of run like Sinatra. I have a chosen few, but...
You say friends. This is just me just sending a text to everyone on my phone, just like... This is a happening thing.
Acquaintances.
It's a public holiday. Get your shit together.
People who met you once at McDonald's.
Yeah, exactly.
2 a.m.
Yeah.
By the way, Stu, we should do a shout-out. Don't we mention on the show you've got some physical... Stu was lifting 300 kilo, did you say, Stu?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And I said I've never lifted 30. So give some shout-outs to Stu, because I've almost died and come back from the death. Still got a bit of a cough. Stu, you're normally a great physical specimen. Is it an injury? Is there a limp, Stu, at the moment? Or?
There's a bit of a limp, yeah.
What about a cane? Because, I mean,
I'm tempted to go for the house look, yeah.
Yeah, and you can always swap the kids with it. I can pull that off. Millennials, you can swap
the disheveled beard look.
Get off my lawn. That kind of thing. I'll wind up this year.
I like the troubled genius thing, just because I want to be considered like a troubled genius that walks in and solves things and leaves again in a limpy, grumpy fashion.
God, that fits
me to a T.
That fits you to a T, man. Yeah, exactly. And you could always update House's look, you know, from...
Just lean into the grump. I've got a lab coat. Let's run with that.
Stu, if you ever need any help in leaning into the grump, I can assist you there.
I think you and I have that down.
Yeah, we've got that. I don't need to...
I've become grumpier since doing these shows.
Well, there's so much to rail against. Okay, so, look, I think we've covered a lot of topics this show. We will catch you next week for 52. Obviously, like us on Facebook and join the Signal of Doom Facebook group. So do two things, and that way I'll be very happy with you. I always like to grow the group. Obviously, we're members of, my God, what's it called? The collective that I've just almost forgot the supergroup that we're part of. It's like, nice, did George Harrison ever forget he was in the traveling fucking Wilburys? No, he didn't. And for a second, I did. So join the collective.
I feel like Tom Petty might have.
Tom Petty, I won't back down. It's just stupid. That's what happens when you smoke a lot of dope.
Yeah, it is.
when you're dedicating a good one of the Tom Petty albums I had, he actually has him doing a bong in the liner notes.
Yeah,
I was like, classy Tom. Like you just couldn't be bothered doing anything. Like, someone take a photo of this. anyway, so follow that. You've got Into the Night, Inner Demons, We Have a Hulk, I'm Not Your Target Demographic, all these podcasts that we're allied with, and we're probably going to take over the world. Yeah. Will I be president?
I'm Your Target Demographic is on YouTube as well, and there's a couple of videos up there with, we make a guest spot appearance in there. Yeah,
we've got another one as well. There's all these questions we've got to do as well. There's another one. It's like being part
of... It's a whole thing. Taking over the world actually takes work, apparently.
Yeah, I want to be the emperor, but I don't want all the responsibility.
So we are also on YouTube. Signal of Doom. We're on Twitter. Like us there.
We're on...
Just start searching Signal of Doom and just like, subscribe, thumbs up, whatever you can.
If you want to get branded, like put a barcode on Signal of Doom or something, I'll you know, that's okay with me. Do you know that millennials now, Stu, apparently there's this thing where instead of having a ring, an engagement ring on their finger, they're inserting it into their actual bone? That's what I read. Yeah, I read that on the Facebook. And someone said, no, we're not. But some people are inserting the engagement rings into the bone rather than not just wearing a ring on
it. What do you mean inserting it into the bone?
Like into your finger. Like,
I understand what a bone... What do you mean inserting it? I don't...
Somehow getting the ring. I don't know how. They're drilling into it and it's getting into your actual bone on your finger.
What, so they're basically piercing your finger?
Yep. Yes.
That's... Exactly. That's stupid. A little fucked up.
And, I mean, is there any guarantee that, like, these marriages are going to last?
Well, 50% of them don't, according to statistics.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not any... You know, obviously I've got a girlfriend.
It's the same as getting, like, a partner's name tattooed on you. Dumb move, people.
Dumb move, but I'll take that over getting a fucking ring inserted in my finger.
I feel like that would grow out eventually and you could cover it with an actual ring.
Yeah, whereas if you get, like, you know...
If you got, like, your partner's name tattooed on your neck, that's there.
Well, all the chicks with the tramp stamps and, you know, it's like, who's Bob? Oh, well, thanks, Bob.
I don't know. Like, I get. Parents, maybe.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Brothers, sisters, yeah. Family, yes, but...
Yeah.
A partner's name?
I'd still say unnecessary. Like, if I saw you coming and sporting Greg on your arm, I'd be like, are we taking it a bit far?
Yeah, worried for my mental state if that's, like, what's happening.
I'd be like, it's touching.
I'm on a sharp downhill if I'm getting Greg tattooed on.
Are you okay, Stu?
Yeah. People just assume I was hardcore gay after that point. Like, who's this Greg that you love that much? Like, oh, he's my brother. That's weird.
Okay, weird. That's not better.
Yeah, that's not good.
Anyway, on that note, Stu, I think we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
See ya.